It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy Iannacco's here. Alex Lindsay's here. We brought in Adam Engst from Tidbits because Renee Ritchie's on his way down to CES. We're going to talk about 2017. Here it is. What are Apple's big moves going to be in the 2017 time frame? We're talking about a new iPhone, new iPads, new Macs. Well, we'll find out with our panel next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 540, recorded Tuesday, January 3rd, 2017. We're making them as fast as we can. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you fresh, high-quality ingredients to cook delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/twit. And by Squarespace. Make your next move. Make your next website with Squarespace's all-in-one platform. Visit squarespace.com and enter the offer code MACBREAK for a free trial and 10% off. And by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Go to ring.com/MACBREAK and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit with their limited time offer. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Appful. And joining me to my right, we've repositioned him. Because I think Karsten is dyslexic. You always end up on the right. You're supposed to be over here. It's Andy Iannacco. I know, I'm a man of habits. Andy Iannacco from the Chicago Sun-Times on my left.
This is like the traditional Soviet Union May Day parades. Every time there's a yes. shift in who sits closest or farthest away from the premier or on what side, it means something that CIA analysts will then have to scrutinize very, very closely.
Sitting directly behind Premier Gorbachev, Alex Lindsay of the Pixel Corps.
Hello, hello.
And Boris Yeltsin joins us today in the form of Adam Engst from Tidbits.
Howdy.
You don't have the birthmark.
Yeah. But I got the penguin who is still in the past holiday season.
Right.
So
actually, it was Gorbachev who had the birthmark, and you do have the holiday penguin, which is good.
Yeah, penguins are slow to change. They like their costumes.
No, it's not Russian Orthodox Christmas yet.
Not yet.
Little Christmas has yet to come. So
that's right.
My Christmas tree is still up. My happy Halloween door hanger, which my dad used to traditionally keep up until
in
my family, like when my parents passed away, there are people who wanted the silverware. There are people who wanted, you know, the hope chest from the wedding. I wanted like the cardboard Hallmark happy Halloween door hanger that dad bought for Halloween one year, but then decided that he's going to have it on the door for every specific holiday, sometimes taping up a little, covering up the Halloween with Christmas or birthday or whatever as needed. That was one of the few things that I said, I will, I'm willing to die on this hill. I get the 15-year-old torn up $3 cardboard happy Halloween thing. And fortunately, they let it go without a fight, oddly enough.
When is Russian Orthodox Halloween? Is it?
Well, there's because of the later harvest.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. The pumpkins come in May.
I think it's next week. I actually have to look it up because I don't have the metronome of mom calling me. Okay, now remember, we're gonna have
Christmas is coming.
We're gonna have the sausage and we're gonna have the honey and poppy seeds. So yes, I always have to look that up.
Let us, this first new show of 2017, first show of 2017. It's great to have you all once again to talk about the Mac. I got my AirPods. Did you all get your AirPods or did you order them or do you care?
Not yet.
Not yet.
Don't care.
I usually find all the bugs have been kind of worked out.
Don't care. Doesn't want the bugs. Who cares?
I just wait until when they start shipping and they catch up with demand. Usually that's about the same time when most of the bugs have been sorted, so I just kind of wait.
See, my problem is that I got this little thing here. It's this tiny one-ear Bluetooth earbud, and it costs literally $13 on Amazon.
But it doesn't have the W1 chip.
It doesn't, but I can buy 12 of these for the same cost as AirPods. And the fact is that I don't give a damn about quality or anything like that. I'm listening to a podcast while I'm doing yard work or something. Yeah. So, you know, this is just like, put it in, and, you know, I will say it's actually worked perfectly. It stays in so well that I have to kind of pop my ear out from the back to get it out. So $160 for a pair of AirPods versus $13 for this little thing from China. I guess I'll go for the little thing from China.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to reviewing them, like, when Apple sends me a pair. But so I'm not saying I don't care about them, but as a consumer, this is not a comment. This is a comment on my style. This is not a comment on the design of these AirPods. It's that I don't have $170 to spend on headphones, period, because I just don't use, like Adam said, if I'm wearing headphones, it's because I'm on a train or a bus somewhere, or I'm taking a walk. If I'm listening to music and I really want to appreciate the quality of the music, I actually have very nice, like, plug-in headphones in the house that are, you know, big cans, sort of like that. And so I just don't have a need for them. And also I'm the sort of dope who will lose a $170 pair of headphones. So admittedly, I'm not the best target for this.
See, yeah. I'd be wearing them doing yard work, so I'd lose them, like, and then the lawnmower would eat them or something. So, yeah.
You guys are really swimming upstream. Tim Cook says they've been a runaway success.
They're huge.
Is he biased or something?
A little bit. Now, my question really is, I like these a lot. I have to say, I like them a lot. In fact, to me, this is Apple getting its mojo back a little bit, where design and function are beautifully married. And you get the little click, which I really...
Apple, right? Surprisingly important. Like those force feedback things. You know, I bought some cheap lightning cables, you know, packs of five for $11 or something, thinking, that'll be great. We'll just throw something. It's when we throw them out on tables and stuff like that. And the fact that they didn't click when you push them into the iPhone, no one wanted to use them.
Yeah.
Like, everyone was like, I don't know if this is working or not. These are, you know, we can't put these on our phones. And so those little things make a huge difference.
These have magnets everywhere. Yep. When I put the pods into the thing, they snap in. The sound quality is good. I'm told it's the same hardware for the sound reproduction as on the AirPods, the wired ones, which aren't the best in the world. And for the price, you'd expect maybe something a little better. But they sound really good to me, especially for spoken word. The microphones sound good. I have had one weird issue, and I don't know if it's not happened again, but I've only had them since I got home on Saturday. I wanted to leave a voice recording to see, you know, if they, you know, how the sound quality was with the microphone. So I was in the car, and I said, talk, make noise, talk amongst yourself. And I dialed my own number, and I immediately thought it was a little weird because the ringing sound was brrr. It wasn't the brrr. It was brrr. And then I left the voicemail. Let me see if I can find it, because there was something going on. Now, maybe this is an issue with, I don't know. Maybe you guys can tell me what it's an issue with. The voicemail, shoot, where is it?
Our reviewers had found that there were sound quality problems when you were talking, that it didn't seem to be able to have full bandwidth in both directions. So you started to lose audio quality if you were using the mic.
Well, listen to this and tell me. Now, I don't know. Carson, can you hear my audio? You probably don't know yet. Let's try it.
That's awesome.
can we capture that in case we want to do some sort of sci-fi alien flick? Like,
which Star Wars character is that?
I know exactly. I wish it's a Jawa.
I wish I could
carbonite.
That's a trap. I wish I could reproduce that, but I haven't been able to. So I don't know if that was a pairing issue or what. I mean, I was using it to listen to music just fine. Then I dialed the phone, and like I said, the warning was that the dial tone was really pitched down. And then that, you heard the message. But the problem is, I really didn't have any, if you weren't paying attention, or you just thought, well, that's what the ringtone sounds like, you might have left that message. And let's hope it wasn't an important person that you were calling.
Well, you know, that there's a lot of, you know, you just have to learn how to turn that bug into a feature. You know, back when when we had that antenna problem, you know, what I you know, the big advantage of that antenna problem that we had with the former iPhone, or I don't know what it was, the 5 or the 4 or whatever, was that if you held it just right, it would drop the call. So you're talking to someone and you were able to get out of the call without overtly hanging up on them. You could just hold
it. You
didn't
have to do the, I'm losing the signal, pound it on your chest.
You didn't have to do that. Because it would say call drop. And that's what I used to call a soft drop. Rather, a hard drop is I'm just going to hang up on you, but a soft drop is
did it on purpose.
I'm just going to hold it the wrong way, you know, so.
Anyway, it hasn't happened again, although I haven't left any messages since then. I'm wondering if this might have been the reason they were held up. And by the way, Tim Cook's runaway success really goes along with the quote, "We're making them as fast as we can," which, given that there was such a delay, maybe isn't it all that fast. I don't know. I like them. I like them in every other respect. You know.
It was interesting. I was like, you're talking about the delay, though, because if you as soon as they went on sale online, some people were able to get them right away. And then if you got in later that day, it was a 4-week wait.
Yes. And that's what I got, by the way, Adam. I got this was supposed to come January 12th and they came early.
But now, and you know, very shortly after, it's a six-week wait. So that's a long time. I mean, Apple presumably is making them as fast as they can, but you know, when they're piecing together one at a time because they got three people on the line, you know, maybe not so much. So who knows? He could be telling the absolute truth and still be selling slowly.
I can absolutely vouch for the ease of pairing them because you just, you know, you put it next to your phone, open the lid, and it goes, "Oh, I see your AirPods," and then iCloud syncs that pairing, so it appears on my iPads and my Macintoshes as well.
And
so
that's brilliant. Nice.
Yeah, that's really... So that's the W1 chip, right? That's the benefit of that.
Mm-hmm. We've had good cause to question where Apple has been going in their engineering decisions over the past year, but this is absolutely everything we hope to get from an Apple product. I mean, just these little things where it was not terribly easy to fit magnets where they're supposed to go. It was not terribly easy to design a brand new chip that if it recognizes that it's going to be communicating with an Apple product, it can actually do a lot more mojo to make take a lot of the BS out of using Bluetooth. They could have made a very, very, very good set of wireless earbuds for $100, $150, and people would have been very happy with them. But this is I really want to. I have used them. I don't own a pair, but I've used them, and it really does feel like I remember the quote that the engineers were using on the design of the iPhone, where we started off by taking the smartphones we were using out of our pockets and complaining about things we hated about them. And it seems as though they said the first step was we're going to take the Bluetooth headphones out of our bags and out of our pockets and complain about everything we hate about them and make sure that ours don't do any of that.
Yeah. Here's a cool thing. If you hold the can you see? Do you have the over the shoulder, Karsten? If you you could see my phone. If I open the dental floss case next to my phone, it pops up not only with the name of the AirPods, but the current battery situation. With both the headphones and the case. Of course, the case is a charging case. That's kind of nice. There's little things like that. This is a very Apple-y product. I think, again, form and function beautifully married in an elegant way. Maybe a few glitches. We're seeing some battery life issues. People are complaining that the battery life will drain very rapidly.
1.0.
Exactly, 1.0.
They'll fix. And also, I think one of the things that people sometimes forget is that so much of what Apple's doing in hardware now is driven by enough custom software that they can really fix things with software updates. So it's not like, oh yeah, the first hardware that you got you'll have to wait till the second revision of the hardware. No, they'll ship an update at some point and it'll just fix the stuttering problem or whatever it was with your voicemail, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
We hope. Ultimately, all voicemail is going to suck.
Yeah. And I've gotten over the dopiness of walking around with these things hanging out of my ears. I mean, they don't look that bad, do they?
They're fine. I really wish that they went all the way in. I mean, and figure out something else for the mic. But, I mean, I really, I don't really like the idea. I don't like the form factor of the original, of the iPods. You know, like earphones that come with the iPhone. So I think that's part of my problem.
You have to understand that these are neither noise canceling nor like the Edimotix ceiling. They're just like regular headphones, the wired headphones. You can hear people talk. Although that's an advantage. I mean, I could put both of them in and walk around and look dorky, but I could still hear everything that's going on. And then, you know what I really want? And I mentioned this yesterday in iOS Today. I think it'd be so cool if there was a hearing aid mode for this. Because hearing aids, my hearing aids cost $6,000. Hearing aids are very, very expensive. All you'd need to do is have the microphones be on all the time. You'd have full stereo reproduction. These could be amazing hearing aids, I think.
Yeah, I, you're reminding me that I haven't talked to my usual seeing eye geek about that. I'd be surprised if there wasn't. I'd be surprised if it doesn't support a mode that would not be familiar to someone who doesn't use hearing aids every day. And so that's what we expect from Apple. And so they're so committed to this sort of thing. I'd be surprised if there's any obstacle.
My wife did a artistic photo shoot of me wearing them in real life.
they are a look.
It's a.
I'll say that.
I think actually one is better than two almost.
Really?
Mm. Yeah, like one looks intentional. Two looks like you're wearing hearing aids.
Yeah, it looks intentional. That, yeah, like you think it's jewelry.
I don't think we'll have long to wait before you can buy them in colors. Like I could see this being a lot less shocking if it were like a gray or a black.
Yeah, white is awfully.
I keep thinking that one of the best like hacks you could do to these things is just to get some like rubber cement or something and protect like the microphone ends of it and just like drizzle them like over like the white plastic so it looks like your ears are leaking earwax, because at least it'll be like really cool.
Disgusting.
And horrible. Exactly. Awesome.
Disgusting. Okay.
Or maybe for our friend the Heineken the beard of truth, have it like color mix like red food coloring into the thing. So it's like I don't even care.
The other thing I should point out to make the review complete is that this one size fits all, and that doesn't fit everybody. My wife has very small ears, small ear canal, and she has to usually get different tips for her headphones and things. And she said these fit, but they're uncomfortable after a little bit because they really are kind of in there. So just you should try before you buy. But as I said, I think not bad. The price is a sticking point for a lot of people, but not bad. The other review I'd like to kind of round off is this MacBook Pro. And I'm sad to say this, but I think the touch bar is a flop. Very disappointed in it. I love the fingerprint reader. Touch ID is great, and every laptop should have that, as many PC laptops have for years. But I don't find the trackbar useful because it's always changing. I guess if you lived in Photoshop or you lived in Lightroom all the time, and then you'd know what it was saying all the time. But you have to look down. And the reason now I'm having to say, and by the way, I don't think I'm alone in this, I have to say, this is not something you should avoid, is I hit it a lot. And even Renee Ritchie, who loves it, admitted that he had to turn off the Siri button, which is normally in the upper right, because he kept getting Siri activated. It's not hard, maybe I'm a sloppy typist, to accidentally hit the touch bar, which, depending on what part of it you hit, will interrupt your typing with a, you know, pop up something, or Siri will pop up. And so I'm of the opinion, I'd love to hear what you guys think, that you should avoid, I hate to say this, the MacBook Pro with Touch Bar.
I don't think it's a bomb. I think that I've had more time to use it now. My review period has just started with it. I think it's a lot like Force Touch on the phone, where it will become spectacular once you yourself find that one app that, oh my God, the rails are greased from between me and Productivity City, thanks to the fact that I've got this set of shortcuts and this tool, and give yourself time for your brain to rewire to make that part of the part of where you look for cool bits of interface. I will say that at this point, I really think that Apple could have come up with a much more clever way to integrate that kind of touch into not just the current MacBooks, but the entire MacBook line. The more I use the touch bar, the more I keep wishing that the Magic Trackpad, for instance, what if they made a Force Touch OLED Magic Trackpad that was the size of a 3x5 card, something so that you could do signatures on it. You could do not just little tiny little like tic-tac little buttons on it, but you could have like actual icon little help buttons and real like full color palettes. And it would solve the problem of of the kind of mental hiccup that I keep having between, are these graphical interface buttons or are they keys on my keyboard? No, I'd say, no, this is my control pad. You could, I keep wishing that like in Final Cut, I could just click a button, click options for, oh, I see you have one of these. What tools would you, please drag the following tools that you'd like to use into this. One of the things I would have would be like just a jog controller. So I could just scroll, stop. That's the frame I want. I get more excited about what that kind of a device could be than I get about what the touch bar is.
Well, and I think that I worry that this is a transitional technology to a glass keyboard, which would with force feedback, which very much concerns me because I would hate it. So, that's the concern I have. Of course, I just wanted a touchscreen for Christmas and didn't get it. And so we have to update, 20 or 30 of these computers and we're not sure what to do. You know, we kind of wish we had bought a bunch of the older ones before and just hung out for a while. We're not that excited about the new ones right now. Again, a lot of us put a lot of these on the road and, I know that there's little adapters and everything else, but the absence of the MagSafe is a huge killer for us because it has saved us so many times.
Well, you've seen the Griffin effect, Patrick Delahanty.
I've been tweeted it. Every time I mention it on the show, I get tweeted 200 times.
So Patrick Delahanty bought it, and he says it saved his life. You have to use a special cable with your adapter, Type-C cable, and it has on it, on the end here, a breakaway Type C thing. So let me show you. I'll put it in the.
If I got one, I would definitely. And if I break down and buy one to test, I would definitely buy that. I mean, there's no way I would own one of these without that. But the problem is that little nub sticking out is not something I can just leave in the computer. It's a leverage point that's going to ruin that USB-C if you leave it in there and put it in your backpack.
Well, you don't leave it in there. It's part of the cable.
It's an additional expense.
It's the basic. The basic thing of you had something that worked great for you and now it's not there anymore. And it's hard
not just
to
me.
Disappointed by that.
It's probably one of the most ingenious inventions that Apple ever did, and they took it away for no good reason.
Right. I mean, for every individual, it's easy and quite correct for someone to say, like when I rail on about the flatness of the keyboard, say, oh, come on, it feels great. I don't know why you keep complaining. Just give yourself time to get used to it. And that's perfectly correct from that person's point of view. And they're right to if I were to say that it is hands down a terrible keyboard, objectively a bad keyboard, I'd be completely wrong. But when it comes to I've got $1,500 of my money or $2,000 of my money, it is a deal breaker for me the way that the MagSafe is for you. And this is the sort of problem. These are the sort of problems that Apple will confront as they remove things that individuals seem to like. They start to look a little bit. If you do this enough times and suddenly the next time they've got $1,500 in their pocket to buy a new laptop, maybe they're not. There's a mic. They're in one of the seven malls in America where there's a Microsoft store and an Apple store in the same mall. Maybe they, while they're waiting for their kid to come back from the food court, you walk in and you try a Surface tablet, and oh my goodness, it's not as sucky as it was when you were using Windows 95. Yeah. And that's the fish hook gets into that person's mouth, and blah, 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 blah. And that's how that happens.
You combine that with the unpredictable battery life, which everybody, including Consumer Reports,
they'll solve that. I think they'll solve that.
Software,
I think it's a software thing.
Yeah. The keyboard is interesting. Tanya has one. I haven't typed on it significantly, but my father was interested in getting a new laptop and or an iPad with a keyboard, and so he just wanted. I took out a MacBook Air and the new MacBook Pro and some iPad stuff I had around and everything, and he instantly loved the MacBook Air keyboard. He instantly hated the MacBook Pro keyboard. Yeah, it was just first thing he touches it, he says, like, my wrists are already starting to hurt. You know, I was like, okay, I don't know why, but, you know, if you don't like it, you don't like it. And, you know, I can't tell you what's right
there
or wrong.
There is a great, there's a huge component of psychology in that, right?
I mean, but there was, but no, but he didn't have any preconceptions.
He didn't, okay.
He didn't. It was just like, I want to try keyboards. And I was like, okay, here's one, here's another one, here's another one, here's another one.
Yeah.
And yeah, and he's like, hey, I love this one, I hate this one. Okay, you know, whatever you like, you know, it's.
Well, and when I started, I didn't have any strong opinion about it when I got the 12-inch. And I got the 12-inch, and I just realized I just wasn't writing anything long. I didn't want to write anything long form on it. So I would sit there, and I could answer email on a plane, which is kind of what I used it for. And then I realized I wasn't even putting it in my bag. I was like, if I have this, I might as well. The way I'm using it, I might as well just go back to an iPad. You know, like if – because I was – the 12-inch was really for me when I get in an economy seat and I can't open my laptop. Or if I'm in some kind of cramped position, but I was like, for what I'm using it for, I might as well just use an iPad because I can draw on the screen, you know, so without having that, it wasn't worth it.
I like using my iPad because like the keyboard is so much better. I've actually been, I need for a quick trip last week, I actually snapped it into my Create keyboard from Logitech, which I haven't used a lot because it makes it a lot thicker. And it just reminded me of what a brilliant keyboard they've got in there and how it kicks the butt of not just the new MacBook's keyboard, but my current MacBook Pro keyboard, which was also a little bit thinner and a little bit less responsive. Someone was asking me for recommendations on iPad keyboards. And I found myself saying, when the question is keyboards, the answer is almost always Logitech. And it just, oh goodness. Someone hire somebody important from Logitech, someone who has big, male or female, big, strong, metaphorical, meaty hands to grab the lapels of someone who is saying, it's okay if we make the keyboards not good. That says, no, I've spent 20 years dealing with people and trying to make keyboards better. We are not going to make the keyboard any smaller. We are going to make it bigger and thicker. We're going to make the keyboard switches much, much better than they were before. And because I have this big pitcher of ice water and I can pour it right down your pants, you are going to agree with me on this point.
So, I don't want to let this go. You mentioned, Adam, I think you said that you felt firmware would fix the battery problem. Why is that? What's going on?
I mean, the big thing in the Mac, obviously, is the system management controller, which is doing a huge amount of that stuff in terms of tracking what's going on behind the scenes. I mean, it's even possible. I mean, God, I haven't had one of these that I've been able to play with, but it's even possible, I would think, that resetting the system management controller might help these people who are having battery problems. The fact that it's inconsistent says to me there's something low level which is confused.
Right.
And because inconsistent doesn't sound like hardware, right? I mean, the hardware's got to be pretty much the same. And so it's inconsistent, really feels like there's some bug in a particular usage scenario or configuration scenario or who knows what.
Yeah, you're right. It could be something like switching from the onboard graphics
Precisely.
To discrete graphics randomly or repeatedly. That would absolutely be a problem. I would think we would notice something like that, wouldn't you? Maybe not.
Well, but you never really know what's right. happening behind the scenes because so much is going on now. I mean,
you're right.
You know,
the physical yeah. hardware, the battery, isn't inconsistent, I wouldn't think.
Right.
So it must be something the software is doing in an interaction with the battery.
Yeah.
Well, it'll be nice if they fix it. Consumer Reports actually, for the first time, I think in my memory, did not recommend the new MacBook Pros for the inconsistent battery problem.
Well, so there's also that thing going on with, what is it, the iPhone 5S and 6, I think, or there's some like 30% battery problem where they get to 30% yeah. and they kind of die.
It's really, it's 40 when it's warm and 65 when it's cold. I have one.
But I should say that we're now hearing a very similar thing with the AirPods.
Yeah.
So there may be some family of problems. I don't know.
Well, and so here's the thing. Apple said that they were putting in iOS 10.2 some additional diagnostic information to try to figure out what's going on. So they know something's happening.
Yeah.
They don't know how to fix it yet, but they're putting in more logging. And so the hope is that, yeah, once they actually are spewing tons of logs about what's going on at the power level, they can start to say, oh, it's that. Okay, fine. We'll change that and we'll see 10.2.1 or 10.3 or whatever it is that will resolve it. And I'm hoping the same kind of thing is what we're going to see on the MacBook Pros.
No, and I only bring it up. I don't want to be nitpicky. I only bring it up so that people who are considering a MacBook Pro, which is frankly a fairly expensive purchase, understand, you know, what some of the potential pitfalls are. It wouldn't be as big a deal if you didn't see manufacturers making PC, you know, Windows-based hardware in a much broader range, a variety of form factors for a much lower cost, with much longer battery life in many cases. So there's a competition, but it's not a one-to-one competition because, frankly, many of us don't want to use Windows. If you want to use Mac OS...
Think of it as a point system, and every time you spend more than $10, more than a burrito's worth of your money on technology, it really has to earn a certain number of points before it earns your purchase. And don't just because you've bought a Mac or a Windows machine every single time for the past 20 years doesn't mean that a Windows machine should be your next machine or your Mac should be your next machine. That's always an opportunity to ask yourself, what do I need a computer to do now in 2017? And how can this next MacBook do that as well or better? And I'm not even saying jump to Windows. I'm saying seriously consider getting an iPad Pro, because you might be surprised if you've never really thought of it. Maybe it's because you haven't really looked at it, what the iPad can do, since 2 years ago, the last time that you seriously considered using it as one of your main devices. So every single time, unless a major tech purchase either solves a problem for you or creates an opportunity for you, you probably should just keep your money in your wallet.
Good advice, Dad. Thank you. There is a story, and I guess Mac Rumors got this from Reddit, that a software reset has worked for some users to fix the battery drain issue on the AirPods. If that's the case, then a firmware fix clearly would also fix that problem. So we will watch with interest. I don't know how you reset the AirPods, but I guess if you find this article...
We found Josh Centers, our managing editor, who has a pair of these, had some problems where he was actually losing connection on his iMac and then getting stuttering and stuff like that. And he tried a bunch of different things. And then after all that, the thing that finally worked was to unpair it, from all the devices, power everything off so that there could be no question, power just the iMac on, pair it to that, and then bring everything else back up. And it's sort of, because it picks up everything else as it goes.
Yeah.
And once he did that, it was fine everywhere else too. Huh. So it was just kind of that, there's that always that clean slate of like, just start from scratch. And it's harder and harder to do that because everything's trying to do stuff for you now. But sometimes,
According to this Redditor, if you press and hold the setup button, there's a button on the back, which is not immediately obvious, for 15 seconds until you see the status light flash amber a few times and flash white, you will have reset it and you will, of course, need to repair. But it's so easy to repair. It's not a big deal. And this comes from actually an Apple support thread, not Apple itself, but an Apple support thread from Dij Holt. So I haven't noticed it, so I'm not going to mess with it. But if I do, that's I guess the fix. Yeah. You shouldn't see big battery drops. It's not draining much. Let's take a break. Come back. We do have news from Apple, and I'm curious what you think's going to be the next big shoe to drop from Apple in 2017. Adam Engst is here from Tidbits, the first and longest continuous running Apple newsletter since the early 20s, tidbits.com, since the turn of the century. That's even better.
1990.
Since the turn of the century. Wow.
Since before the turn of the century.
Since last century.
Yeah, right.
Wow.
Back in the 19th century. One of those centuries.
Back in the 20th century, there was this thing called Tidbits. Tidbits.com. It's always good to have you, Adam. And don't forget the Take Control series of ebooks, which are always hideously useful. Hideously.
Our new tagline.
Hideously useful. That is not a good. That's not a felicitous phrase.
So useful, you'll want to kill it with fire.
That's Andy Anacco, Chicago Sun Times, and Celestial Waste of Bandwidth, CWOB.com. And of course, Alex Lindsay is here from the Pixel Core. Hey. Follow him on Twitter to keep up on what's going on the Pixel Core. A-L-A-X.
Or just listen to me randomly complain about people putting images in their footers, in their email.
I saw that.
Oh.
You said, if you do that, then don't send me an attachment because I won't open it. Why?
Well, no, it's just that you. So the easiest way to search when someone sends you a file is look for all the emails from them with an attachment.
But they all have attachments if you have an image in your signature.
Exactly. Now so you're just like, now I can't find it.
You're right. It's annoying as hell. Plus,
and there's no good reason for it. I mean, literally,
up my disk drive with little, logos of companies I don't care about.
We don't care about any of those images, just in case you're wondering. If anyone's listening who actually makes that decision, stop.
iHeartRadio does that, the company that runs the Premiere, which runs my radio show. So all the email I get from Premiere. And then the worst one is there's a little GIF of a paperclip.
Right.
I have 8,000 copies.
You know that there were meetings about that. There were meetings about that paperclip. There were people who sat around. They had conference calls where they left their mic open. That's another pet peeve of mine. they had speaker phones. They had all that stuff, and they all talked about it for weeks. And then they put a paperclip in their email thing that ruins everything for everybody.
What I find hysterically funny about things like that, and things like the color of like a twist tie that comes with trash bags, everything, that there is, for every one of those little tiny things that seem kind of meaningless, there is somebody at some conference at some party saying that was my baby. That I had the vision for the paperclip, and I had to fight some of the old squares about it, but I knew that I was right. I said, Bob, if I don't win this one, I should just resign.
Bob, one word, you hired me. Paperclips. One word.
Hey, I met the guy. Remember AOL when they were sending out those CDs?
Yeah.
You got like two a week, three a week.
You met the guy who thought that up?
Yeah.
That guy.
I know. I didn't strangle him, but I was like, you're the guy.
How many dinosaurs died for that guy? Oh, I guess they were all dead already, but still.
I have stacks of CDs.
Yeah. And I also want to curse Alex Lindsay because, John Slonina should really curse you for this Field Runner's attack. John has sunk a significant portion of his total income into this. You could have bought a house, John.
I did.
Oh, he did. He bought a house. But it's fun. I really, John, I played it last night till the wee hours of the morning. It is really fun. No, I don't want this one-time offer.
I really enjoyed it for the times I played it. The problem is that all my playing time is on a plane, unconnected from the internet. And so it's been this kind of...
This is the bane of modern app gaming, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You can't play on Pokemon Go. You can't play on a plane. You can't play the new... What is the new hotness? Mario Runner? You can't play on the plane?
Yeah.
I was sitting on the plane trying to play a game.
I did feel very good, though. I picked a new level of the Field Runners 2 to play for the next year. So that was one of my New Year's things, because I've been playing the same level for a year.
What?
And
what?
To perfect a level, for me, it's stressful to have to learn a new level. So I just get better and better and better at it. So the key is you have to get to 200, level 200, or 2 million points, whichever comes first in it. Or even when you do that, you just keep on wanting to get better.
Maybe I should do that.
And then you do it without any of the little extras. So no freezes, no mines, you have to do it cleanly, properly.
You should hook yourself up to a brain monitor while you're playing that, because I'm thinking you're flatlining for most of it. There's nothing going on.
It definitely is very relaxing for me. So because it's not making huge changes. It's just making subtle details, because the best thing about Field Runners is that it's so predictable. And so you can sit there and figure, I used this kind of tower the last time, but I'm going to change it up, and I'm going to figure out how to, manage your resources to make sure you don't. Anyway,
I did try to play Pokemon Go on the plane. It said you were going too fast. But You know, the reason why they have now, and I love it, on the Apple Watch, you can play Pokemon Go on the Apple Watch. It'll notify you when you're near a Pokestop. I played it on the Boston Commons, Andy.
I was about to say, you know, they made new laws about the phones for California, but not the watches, I don't think.
I think it counts. I do. I think it counts. I don't think you're allowed to.
One of my most fun experiences with technology lifetime was a couple of weeks after Pokemon Go came out, and I was in the common just taking a walk, and I see it was like a hippie, like, drum circle of like two, three, yes, four dozen strangers,
yes,
just sort of like sitting the same place. And so, you know, and actually it was my phone buzzed, and the National Weather Service had an alert for like Boston, like actual downtown Boston, involving hail and thunder and lightning. And so I felt as though, as the older person in this group, I summoned my courage, suppressed my social anxiety, and said, "Excuse players, can I have your attention, please?
Wow.
Please check the weather apps on your phone. The National Weather Service has announced a severe weather alert for this area in the next half hour involving hail and lightning. So please check your weather apps and be safe. Thank you."
Oh, that's awesome.
And I kept walking. And then this young woman,
stay away,
like,
from the brown acid. Okay.
This young woman, like, stopped and said, you're a hero.
Oh, wow.
And I said, I feel like a hero. Thank you very much, young lady.
That is brave of you.
Weather hero.
I would not have done that.
I'm a lifesaver. Well, I'd probably kill the guy right now and offset. I would only offset part of what I did that day.
I think the most surreal Pokemon Go was when I was in the middle of the night. I was walking around Istanbul, and I was at the Blue Mosque, you know, one of the most incredible architectural, at night. And there's like eight people wandering around this one area looking at their phone. And I realized they're in Istanbul looking. They found, because I guessed what it was, and of course opened up Pokemon Go, and it was like, yes, there's a stop.
A Pokestop in the Blue Mosque? No.
And it wasn't in it. It was outside in the yard, you know, a little ways between some of the other mosques and the other things that are there. Wow. And I was just like, that's crazy.
The Hagia Sophia has an incredible battle area there. You should go on over next time you're in Istanbul. Our show today brought to you by Blue Apron. Are you getting hungry? You will by the end of this commercial. Blue Apron's mission in life is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone while supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. That's you. Blue Apron, you know, at the end of the day, you've worked hard. The last thing you want to do, plan a meal, shop for a meal, go home, cook the meal. So you end up at the Olive Garden once again. I know those breadsticks are good, but are they good for you? And do they give you a sense of making something for your friends and family that they're going to love? No, they don't. Blue Apron, when you get home and that Blue Apron box is on your doorstep, refrigerated, fresh ingredients from 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the United States, exactly what you need to make an amazing meal. Actually, three meals in the box. Never, always fresh, never frozen, even the meat and fish, because they're refrigerated. They're really good. You get an easy-to-follow recipe card, and you get a meal you can prepare in 40 minutes or less for less than $10 per meal. Which, by the way, is saving you money, even if you shop for this at the grocery store. Grocery store is about 60% more expensive than Blue Apron for the same exact ingredients, and that's because they don't have stores. They just, you know, ship it to you. They save a lot of money that way. And Blue Apron delivers to 99% of the continental United States. So what I want you to do is go to blueapron.com/twit and look what's on the menu. They have plans for couples or two people or one person, two meals. And they have plans for families with kid-friendly ingredients. Steak and green peppercorn sauce with kale and roasted potatoes, or cod en papillote. That's with the, like, phyllo dough, like a... And frika and spinach. I don't even know what frika is, but it sounds good. That's one thing. You get these new ingredients you've never tried that you will then use forever. Look at that. Chicken souvlaki. I love souvlaki. Can you imagine making that yourself? Yes.
When my wife started using Blue Apron, my daughter was like, "Mom, you are just the best cook."
Yes.
Something new.
Yeah, don't
new
be intimidated.
Every couple days,
it's
it was
easy.
Amazing.
You can do it. They walk you through it.
Yeah.
Seared pork chops with farro, Brussels sprouts, and cranberry chutney. Now you may say, "Oh, I don't want Brussels sprouts." You can, first of all, you don't have to use them, but also you can choose a menu item. They have a broad variety of menu items to choose from. You pick what you get, and they don't repeat more than once a year, so you can always get something new and exciting, like potato and artichoke quiche with romaine and orange salad. It's so good. They have vegetarian plans too. You know what you're putting in there, and that, I really like that. You know what you're getting. blueapron.com/twit. Families that use Blue Apron cook together, according to their research, on average 3 times more often. I like that. Build strong bonds and a delicious meal. Blueapron.com/twit. Oh, I didn't mention, your first 3 meals are free. Now, how much would you pay? Your first 3 meals are free. Blueapron.com/twit. Rumors? You want to do rumors? Lots of rumors. What are we going to see in 2017? They're due for iPad refreshes, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to see at the end of the year, I presume, a 10th anniversary iPhone. That's what I'm telling a lot of people to wait for, right? The 10th anniversary iPhone.
I don't know, though. I don't know if they'd be as eager to say this is a 10th anniversary phone as opposed to this is simply the next iPhone.
Really?
But look how awesome it is. They haven't traditionally been, hey, this is an anniversary product. I'm sure that they're going to spend a lot of time highlighting. It's a great opportunity to highlight their success in creating one of the most influential and mind-changing products ever to come out of technology, and the heritage that and the legacy of that brand. I'm not sure if they're going to call it an anniversary product so much as this is the iPhone 8. It would be interesting to see. I don't know if Apple's now has a rule of having the iPhone 7.0 and then the iPhone 7S and then the iPhone 8 and the 8S. But it would probably get a lot of people wondering if they had what some people are artificially anticipating as a 10th anniversary phone, and it is what some people would consider to be a talk release. This is the part of the year where even if you've heard stuff that from people who are in the know and have told you reliable things, these are still things that are being debated and considered.
Yeah.
Right. But it does seem as though everything I've heard is not incremental stuff. It's real swing for the fences stuff. And a bunch of, you know, that idea that we keep having to postpone for one reason or another that has nothing to do with our ability to actually factor it. Let's absolutely do it this year. So I think it could be a very serious release. It could be a very serious release just by virtue of the fact that they can do a new version of the 2-camera setup with a year's worth of additional knowledge of how people are using this feature and how well that feature is performing. They've also had the Pixel phone is also probably that little goose to say that, oh, dang it, this really is a very, very good camera phone. And Android, a lot of times the differences between Android and an iPhone are not so much a case of Android doing something brilliant and revolutionary, but deciding that, oh, all this time we've had 6 bricks in the backpack we're forced to carry. What if we were to take those bricks out of the backpack? And now suddenly this simple phone is so much better. And one of the things they've changed with the Pixel is with a camera is that a lot of the things that made it not a not great camera that had nothing to do with the image quality have kind of been fixed. So I think they're going to be encouraged to do something great with the camera. But I think we're going to see the first really cool redesign of the front face of the device in years.
I would say they're due to do OLED, although it's going to be hard to get enough OLED screens to fulfill Apple's huge demand. Adam, you have any thoughts about what an iPhone 8 might?
Yeah, I don't know. I do agree with Andy that the anniversary product seems unlikely. I mean, the only one we really saw like that was the 20th anniversary Mac, and that was just weird. You know, it was a neat machine, yeah. No question, but it fit into the lineup very strangely. It was priced very high and then cut radically low, and it feels like it's a little bit like I date myself, but whenever gears get put into product names and like Illustrator 88. Because that's the first one I remember that's happening, you're automatically out of date as soon as it's not 1988 or whatever year it was. And so it feels to me like the anniversary product has a little bit of that problem too, that it's somehow always fixed in time a little bit more than it should be. So apart from that, you know, honestly, I don't get too caught up in speculating about what's going to happen in iPhones. It feels to me like Apple has like this list of features as long as their arm, and they've figured they've got, you know, 5 years in the future, and they've got to keep coming up with something for each one of those releases. So they can't just blow all of them on one release. You know, it's just they're going to have to pick something that sounds interesting enough, like the double cameras on the iPhone 7 Plus, and pick that one for this release.
I think it's going to levitate. It's going to see through. It's not going to require earphones at all. It's simply going to transmit directly to your eardrums.
Should Apple? These
are the things that I'm expecting, and I will be disappointed and frustrated if I don't see those.
One of the things that in the Android community, many of these Android phones, including the Pixels, do is VR. You know, Google has this Daydream VR thing you put in it. The iPhones and Apple doesn't have any VR or AR. Do you think this will be one of the features of a new iPhone, or is that not going to be a big deal next year?
I think it's a great place this for Apple year. To experiment with AR. You know, I think VR maybe. I don't know if that's a real significant thing for Apple. And also, you can with Cardboard, of course, use an iPhone right now with VR. I think that the AR thing that needs to be kind of figured out is the fine tuned tracking. So. Right now, most of the tracking that we're seeing with AR is accelerometer-based and positional-based. And so it's trying to figure that stuff out. And as you notice, things kind of float, you know, over top of everything that you're doing. There is, another way to do that, which is to actually start doing pattern recognition and tracking of the information out there. And there's a couple people experimenting with that. And so that gets everything to kind of lock in on the on what it's seeing. So it grabs onto pixels that it's seeing and it makes sure that everything hangs to it. And when people start doing more of that, it's a little more computationally expensive to do it. So it's going to take a little while for it to really get out there. But I think the processors are getting to the point where they could do that effectively, and it will change AR completely, because all that floating and things kind of moving around like little floaters in your eyes will hopefully largely go away.
I really think that Apple's first foray into AR is not going to be, hey, here's our new platform, or even here's our new set of APIs. It really is just going to be, here is the new version of Maps. Oh my God, we made an amazing change to the app for you. And that's going, and then maybe a couple of years later, we will see some of that technology leak out into other products and to other APIs. But I think that that's an area where if they do all of that in-house, they control everything themselves, they can release when they want to release it, and they don't have to define the experience for other people. I think that that's where they're going to go with it.
I think it's a great safe thing. I mean, the aha moment for my wife is, you know, we got into an argument over the weekend, not a bad argument, but I said, oh, that's Venus. And she goes, that's definitely not Venus. And I just pulled up the sky app, and I just pointed up and I go, no, that's Venus. So, but the idea that it would just suddenly show you all the stars that were up there.
Almost as good as pulling Marshall McLuhan out of the line at the movie.
You know,
that's really good. Well, as a matter of fact, I happen to have right here.
Yeah. It was, you know, it's a new tool to just show that you're right. So,
by the way, how'd that go for you? Did that win the argument, or did you sleep on the couch?
It did. She had not really seen any VR. You know, it's not something she uses on her phone. And so she was, fortunately, she was just, you know, not angry with me for being a dork. and instead was impressed by the technology, which doesn't happen very often.
Very, very lucky man.
It was close.
She clearly read what was printed on the package that you came in before she took it off the shelf.
I missed the bullet by I quickly looked over and look at how great that house is. Let's get that.
Alex has a shrink wrap license around him.
Yeah, exactly.
And you the EULA.
EULA.
Yeah.
All right. What about we'll see new iPads, I presume.
Spring, I think.
This spring, yeah. Anything? What can you do? I mean, this is the same problem really Apple has with the iPhone, is what can you do to improve either product? I mean, what big changes could you make?
You can add pencil support to the iPad mini. You can add the new really wonderful color display to basically make it line wide instead of restricted to just the 9.7 inch iPad. There are a lot of little things that they can do. Right now, I think most of their efforts in the iPad are going to be in making sure they're developing a device that people actually want. I think the iPad is the most brilliant piece of hardware that Apple has right now. The thing that really
it's not
shows off everything
like that, though.
Yeah, but I don't think – I think it's selling like that among tablets, among iPads, like devices. Right now, it's not really convincing a lot of people to spend $600 or $700 on a 9.7-inch iPad Pro instead of the same amount of money on a cheap Windows laptop with a touchscreen. But it's definitely – it's iOS, which is where Apple really wants to put most of their money, it seems, in the near future. And the more they can do to convince people that this is not just like an e-book reader device, it really is competitive with anything that is sold with the Windows logo on it for less than $1,000. I think that's the stuff that they're really going to be eager to take advantage of. And pencil support is definitely going to be there for that.
Yeah.
I think one of the things, obviously, moving to USB-C, hopefully, the one of the big problems for the iPad is it's in this weird, not a lot of easy ways to interface data, you know, other inputs and so on and so forth into it. And I think making that a little easier would help a lot. I do think pencil support across the platform. I think that one of the things I'd love to see in an iPhone 8 is pencil support, you know, so you can take little notes and draw little things and annotate things.
Does that mean it's a mini Pro?
Sorry?
Is that a mini Pro?
Correct.
I guess. It would be a mini Pro. I think those kinds of things could help a lot. I think one of the problems really is that a lot of the software for the iPad, and I think this might be, I don't know exactly where it is, but I've been thinking about it a lot watching my kids. My kids don't really care which iPad they play with. They have access to, you know, a wide range. And the ones that they travel with are ones that are like two or three versions ago, and they're cracked and there's pieces of them chipping off, and they're quite happy just to sit there and do their thing on them. So I think that part of the problem is the software, the new software that people have been developing, that Apple's been developing, isn't really properly taking full advantage of the processor where it's impressive enough to update. So I don't think that it's necessarily that people aren't buying iPads. They're just not upgrading them as fast because there's not that much software out there that feels like it's lagging because you don't have a fast enough iPad. And so
there is no mouse cursor and therefore no spinning rainbow cursor.
Right.
Yeah. And there's definitely software out there that could push it, but people aren't, you know, developing it enough. And I think that this gets into, again, I think Apple has had very much of a, if we build it, they will come, kind of attitude about a lot of these things. And sometimes it might take a little bit of, generation, you know, to get people moving forward. You know, Swift Playground is really amazing, but they really, you know, could afford to spend some money on paying a lot of people to develop a lot of content for it, you know, to get people excited. Same thing with iBooks, same thing with, you know, there's some great technologies out there. And of course they do WWDC, but I think that there could be a lot more aggressive, development of the ecosystem of the platform that might be even funded by Apple to that would pay off in hardware sales. If people were able to fully take advantage of the hardware and were, you know, pushed a little harder to do it.
From my perspective, and I'm not a big iPad guy. I use an iPad to watch Netflix occasionally and read books occasionally, and frankly, that's about it. And it's a form factor that really doesn't do much for me. I don't play games, and if I'm going to browse the web, it's just always better on a big screen. And so it feels to me as though if Apple wants the iPad Pro to really go somewhere, there needs to be two things. One is iOS is just the sandbox is just it prevents so many possibilities that I want to do something that an app won't do, and then I can't do it at all. You know, that on the Mac, I usually put stuff together. I have several apps that work together. I can move data back and forth very quickly and easily. So there's something in the iOS that just seems kind of antithetical to tasks that are not highly specific and thus can be completely solved by one app. And then the other thing is, you know, you look at the Microsoft Surface Studio. Big honking screen, and that would be really fascinating to see Apple do an iPad for. I mean, I that's something where I would have to you'd still have to have something going on the app side so that you could use multiple apps together very fluidly to be able to do things that any one app will not do. But once you get that extra screen real estate and the ergonomics that go there, I mean, part of it is I don't use an iPad because I work standing up. You know, it's kind of hard to do working standing up. And it just feels as though there's a couple of kind of sticking points in the current form factor and the current iOS and iOS really throughout time.
Do you think part of the problem Apple's facing, this really goes to a much larger philosophical question of, part of the problem Apple's facing is the inevitable abandonment of the Macintosh for a touch first operating system for iOS and some future iPad. Admittedly, your complaints are exactly right. You can't do a lot of the stuff you want to do on an iPad, so you do use it on a Mac. But shouldn't Apple really at this point be thinking, all right, how do we transition from the Mac to the iPad and make everybody be use the iPad?
So I do think, I've written about this fairly recently. I don't think that Apple really sees a transition as coming really anytime soon. And the reason is that the Mac has now become an iPhone or iOS accessory. Still a $22 billion product, but it's an accessory, for God's sakes. That's where you do your development.
Oh, jeez.
You know, I mean, isn't that a scary thought?
Yeah.
But if you think about it, that's where handoff comes in. It's so you can switch to your Mac to finish off the task that you, of course, started on your iPhone. No, I never do that. That's a stupid idea. But that's the way Apple's thinking about it. And so as long as you kind of keep that in mind, a whole lot of stuff makes sense. Like, I mean, I don't even get to this, but they screwed up PDF Kit.
We are going to get to this because this is a big deal for you. Yeah,
they want it to be the same between iOS and macOS, but they're not the same platforms, right? Mm-hmm. So you know, on macOS, you're doing much more involved PDF stuff with annotations and editing and text layers and all this kind of stuff. Doesn't happen in iOS particularly. And gee, is it a big surprise that it's a real problem on the Mac? And it's no one said boo about it in iOS 10. So you know, Mac. And macOS isn't going away because we need it. Everyone needs it. The ecosystem needs it, but it needs it as a supporting actor.
Well, but your problems with PDF on the Mac are kind of, don't you think, a indicator that Apple is thinking, how do we make this all iOS ultimately?
Oh, absolutely. And they're doing it badly in this case. I mean, the QA was completely lacking.
So what happened?
So in Sierra, Apple completely rewrites the PDF Kit framework, the library behind the scenes that does all this stuff for developers. And the first stuff we heard about it, you probably remember this when Sierra first came out, the ScanSnap, Fujitsu, the ScanSnap people say, whoa, big problems, don't upgrade. And it took a while to figure out why, and then that actually got fixed in 10.2.1. But
ScanSnap is a scanner intended for scanning receipts and other, you know, quick pieces of paper.
It turns it into
a PDF. And therein lies the problem.
Therein lies the problem. And they were having, and they took them a long time to even figure out what the problems were, because it turns out they were pretty subtle, where they weren't nearly as severe as initially thought. But so the problem was not that ScanSnap was doing anything wrong. It was that PDF Kit, the underlying framework, which the apps rely on from Apple, had changed completely. And lost features. I mean, Apple deprecated a bunch of stuff.
This was confirmed by Devin Think and Michael Tsai, who is a very well-known longtime Mac developer, does a thing called Eagle Filer.
Yep. Developer after developer is complaining about this.
Yeah.
Well, didn't it affect mostly the developers who had actually relied on the Apple substructure rather than writing their... If you use the third-party one, which is usually what you get recommended not to do, is to use something third-party where you end up falling behind. They actually, if they leaned on Apple to do that for them, they're the ones that are really paying the price,
but
right?
These things happen, don't they? I mean, you're supposed to rely on Apple's kits, WebKit and all of this, PDF Kit, to do low-level stuff so you don't have to rewrite it yourself. And Apple's supposed to keep it up to date. But Apple from time to time, and every company, this happens with DirectX and everything else, every company will make modifications and unwittingly cause problems for developers. But they get fixed, don't they?
Well, they haven't gotten fixed in 10.2.1 or 10.2.2. And 10.2.2 introduced a new bad one, where if you edit a PDF in preview that had an OCR text layer, it deletes the text layer. Who needs that?
Oh, that's not good.
You know, Apple. Or here's another one. I just found out about this today. In preview, open up any PDF, use the rectangular selection, draw it a rectangular selection, and then hit Command-C. The whole thing just goes kablooey. I mean, just selecting text stuff in a PDF destroys it. I mean, this is like a total failure of QA. And you could argue that it's a failure of, you know, shipping it too soon, whatever. But the fact is, they broke a whole lot of stuff that a lot of apps rely on. And these are real apps. These are productivity apps. These are apps that people rely on to get their work done.
Now, you obviously do a lot of PDF work because of your publications. Are you saying even Apple's own preview program has these problems?
Yes. Fewer of them. Michael Tsai was saying that he's actually tracked down some of the bugs that he's run into and tried to reproduce them in preview. And he thinks the preview team knows about these and has worked around them in preview, some of them in preview, rather than get PDF kit fixed because other people are hitting ones that preview should be hitting. But preview does have plenty of its own problems as well.
So you have said, like, don't use, in fact, you said this yesterday, don't use preview to edit PDFs.
I can't recommend it right now until
because
they fix
you can
this
corrupt because, your existing PDF by doing so.
Yes, I mean if you've got an OCR text layer, it's gone. I mean, so like when you OCR, when you scan a document, right, you get a picture of the document. But there's a common engine is Abby FineReader, which relies on PDF stuff, PDF Kit, and everything like that.
It comes with a lot of scanners.
Yeah, and so it does an OCR and makes a text layer. So PDF is one of those sort of layered documents where you've got the graphic layer and the text layer on top, and so that allows you to search, for instance, because you're searching text, not trying to search an image. And when you do this, you do some editing on the PDF in preview, it just deletes the text layer.
Is it your sense that this is because of a complete rewrite of PDF Kit, or how did these bugs get introduced? They started from scratch.
Okay. There's a guy, well regarded developer who I shouldn't name because I don't know if I'm supposed to know this, who wrote the original one long time ago for Apple. Actually left Apple, came back to Apple, but isn't on that team anymore. And apparently that, you know, everyone liked his code. And so PDF Kit previously was thought to be an elegant solution, but it was not presumably iOS savvy, having been written so long ago. And so that's why they decided to rewrite it. And that's again. Not a bad thing. Just make sure the bugs are out and that it does the same stuff as the old one did.
Chuck Van Rosbach, former Apple employee, was a guy who's been very outspoken about Apple, said parity with iOS took priority over backward compatibility. And that's what happened with iWork. It's what happened with Photos, with iMovie. So you recommend using PDF Pen. Smile, of course, has been a sponsor of the show for a long time, and that is a good product. They don't have the same problems because they're not using PDF Kit.
That's correct. However, as Greg Scown pointed out when I asked him about it, they're getting complaints from their customers because their customers send a PDF to someone else who touches it with Preview and destroys it. So
I use Preview all the time. I mean, this is what. These frameworks are critical to the continued use of Macintosh. These are really important frameworks because they're just not used by one program. They're used by many, many programs.
Yes, and that's the thing. I mean, and here's the thing that we also don't see, which is that users might not run into every one of these problems, right? I mean, unless you do something that hits the problem in a particular app, or the app has to actually cut a feature out. So the bookends guy said he had to take PDF annotations out of the product because they didn't work. And so we'll see that. But the thing is, what you don't see behind the scenes is this slows down the entire ecosystem as all developers scramble for months to figure out these bugs, report the bugs, work around the bugs if they can, or deal with them if they can't, plus all the support issues. So, I mean, this is something that Apple's, you know, rock in the pond has huge, huge ripples that go out across the ecosystem to both developers and users.
This reminds me a little bit of the problems Apple's had with iCloud's document syncing to the point where people just stopped or refused to use it. Did Apple ever fix that?
I think it's gotten better, honestly, but I don't know if – I mean, it may have been one of those things a little bit sort of too little too late because so many people had already re-engineered their own solutions. So I have not followed up with any of those people who had gone and done their own thing to see if they went back and checked if the problems were resolved.
Well, maybe that may be the same thing that happens to PDF Kit at this point is
And that would be – that would be problematic in some ways.
It's been one of the strengths of the Apple ecosystem is you have this built-in PDF handling capability.
Yes.
On a PC, you have to download Acrobat Reader, and I mean it's a mess, and a lot of people rely on the PDF kit.
And PDF is one of those things that you don't think about how baked in it is. But, you know, nowadays with the browsers, for instance, being able to do PDF internally, you don't even think if you click a PDF link. It just loads. You just read it. You move on. You know, all those kinds of things. You download a PDF. You can edit it. There's forms. There's, you know, text layers. It all, frankly, just works for the most part in Preview. I mean, I wrote a book about Preview, for goodness sakes. Preview is actually a pretty good app. You know, and so it does a lot of stuff for free that people don't realize with PDF and graphics and everything. But, you know, when you can't recommend something that corrupts data. Sorry, it's corrupting data. Not okay.
Andy, wasn't it you who not so long ago was talking about all the things you could do with Preview that people didn't know about? I think it was you.
Yeah, it really is a Swiss Army knife. There are a lot of one-step things I need to do to modify images or deal with PDFs or convert something from one format to another. And rather than launch something expensive, you launch Preview that's optimized, it's really fast, it's compact, it's free, and it's there. So if you'd hate to see anything cripple Preview in any way because it's such a critical app.
So this is this kind of... I mean, I don't want to necessarily couple it to Apple needing to move to iOS. It's related to, but it just sounds like it's a bug. It's a problem. They got to fix it. The team that rewrote it, you know, when you rewrite from scratch, you're going to have these things happen. This, you were replacing something that had been in use for 10, 15, 20 years with something brand new. You're not going to have it polish.
Go ahead, Alex. Yeah.
I guess I would say that I still think that, you know, as I've said for a long time, I think we're looking at a slow unification of the two OSs. And I think that, you know, we're going to keep on seeing these as they keep on closing the gap between the two. I think that you see iOS getting a little bit more of something that Mac OS has and a lot of Mac OS getting stuff that iOS has. I don't think they're going to maintain two OSs forever. And I think that, you know, what we're seeing are compatibility issues as they sort those issues out over the next couple of years.
Yeah, I definitely think we're seeing evidence that Apple has an idea of one type of machine they want to make or one type of computer. And I really do think that my complaints about the new MacBook are best articulated as they seem to be trying to make the entire MacBook line more palatable to a iPad user. If we can't sell them an iPad Pro, we can make the MacBook line more slim, more light, more paring it down to one port for charging and data, and that's it. And that's where we go to. If Apple has decided that that's where they have to be to retain their stature in the industry, then, well, I hope it works for them. I don't know if it's a great model or if it's a if it's a path towards maintaining their status as a great company, but, well, they can do that.
And Gardner in your chat room points out that, you know, moving to, you know, Mac OS to an iOS is going to really be a problem because of fundamental incompatibilities between APIs. You know, if you're having trouble with PDFs, he says, good luck merging incompatible UI kits, for instance. That's good. That's much more of a challenge than just rewriting PDF kit. Well, let's take it now, and I'm depressed again.
Sorry.
I'm trying to be cheerful. Okay.
No. AirPods.
AirPods are really nice. Except for that weird thing with the sound and the battery life, and you know,
it's like these days I feel like every time we talk about Apple for any extent, it's like the movie Cabaret. Where it will start off with fun and gaiety and sex and glitter, and we'll and then it always ends with tomorrow belongs to me,
yeah.
and a slow nothing pan of distorted images of Nazis.
Yeah.
You just gotta end it after money makes the world go round, and that's it.
And also, let's be fair. This is what happens. There's a cycle for tech companies like any other company, and they're. You know, it's hard to be high-flying for a long time. Apple's really kind of already beat the odds by having two kind of great successes. You know, at first with the Apple II and the Macintosh, then Steve leaves, then Steve comes back, and the company has a second great success with the iPhone and the iPad. That's very unusual to expect Apple to continue on that trajectory is frankly unrealistic. We want it to. We wish it will. We wish it would. And but I mean, if it, you can't sit here on the sidelines and watch what's happening and not say something.
No, and especially when it comes to a situation like this PDF stuff, where users need to know, A, avoid certain products, B, be aware of certain activities, C, provide feedback to Apple. Tell Apple, apple.com/feedback.
Yeah.
Tell them that this is a problem for you. This is causing you to not be able to do your work.
Yeah.
That's what will get their attention, hopefully. Because if that doesn't, nothing will.
Yeah. I agree. Because I think it's fair to say we all love Apple and we all love Macintosh and we are all really excited to keep iOS going. And so there's a lot of good here. Let's focus on what needs to be fixed and move
forward.
We all
want new ponies from Apple. Let's face it.
You know what? I'm willing to say at this point we don't need a new pony. Just keep the old pony going.
Yeah, right. Yes. Okay. That's fair. That's like we want a good pony that really just does what it's supposed to do.
And maybe this is a little bit our fault because we do demand of Apple. What's the new iPhone going to be?
Yeah.
What's the new Mac going to be?
I will settle for Apple just like no longer cutting legs off of the pony to make it lighter. That's good for me.
You know, I'll be satisfied. Hey, here's something I'll suggest, which is perhaps this is the problem with macOS updates going free. It's a free update? Well, just everyone should have it. It'll come out on our schedule. It'll have what we feel like having in it. Tough noogies. You don't have to pay for it. Yeah. Back when you
By the way, this is where Microsoft's going with Windows, by the way. Exactly this. Free updates for life.
Yeah.
So let's hope this isn't a recipe for disaster.
Well, there's a question there. I mean, it's sort of the same thing developers run into, right? Where if you charge for an update, those are your customers. You have to persuade them to pay you again. And if you can't come up with something for your customers to pay you again.
Well, that's hardware, right? That's hardware. That's what drives
up. No, it's software too.
Well, software isn't as big a business for Apple as hardware. Hardware is.
Oh, sure. Oh, no, I'm just suggesting that it's the attitude.
Yeah.
That Apple doesn't have to win our loyalty and respect over and over again with the software.
Especially a tech company in this day and age, just say, we're done. We've made the perfect product. We're just going to keep making it. And when it wears out, you should get a new one. Period. Do they need a touch? I think the touch bar is an example of pushing too hard to innovate. I think the tube, the Mac Pro tube, an example of taking something that was perfect and trying too hard to make something different and new. Yeah. I think taking the headphone jack out. I love the iPhone 7. If it had a headphone jack, it'd be perfect.
So, you know, I
Can
think that's
companies in the tech
point.
Industry just say, no, yeah. We made a perfect product. We're done.
Yeah, and we're going to keep putting new processors in it as need be.
Yeah, we'll speed it up and stuff.
And if you say that, you say that we're getting off the rat race. We're getting out of the rat race. We're not going to try to do these huge updates, you know, these big updates every year, like clockwork, because it's good. We're just going to keep them, you know, tweaking, bug fixing. I mean, not like there aren't thousands and thousands of bugs in all this software. Just keep tweaking, keep improving, and it's solving the problems we need. The only thing is they've got to figure out a way to get new customers. And is that good enough for new customers? Because that's what they've all gone. Everything has gone to attracting new customers. That's what the free updates for life, only interesting to new customers.
I think the auto industry went through this in the 50s where they thought, oh, we all do all these chrome and fins and stuff. And finally, they kind of realized, and BMW and Mercedes, just kind of year in, year out, it's we're just going to make it incrementally better. And maybe in 10 years, there's something really cool we got to put in. But I think the auto industry is an example of a mature industry that got it. And every 10 years, somebody will buy a new car. We don't need you to buy a new car every year or every two.
The average car stays on the road for 11 years.
Yeah.
And I think stability for most people in their lives, especially with this kind of thing, is more important than new features.
Right.
I think sometimes that gets lost. You know, like I now have a phone that crashes, you know, and that's like, you know, that's the
that's
one thing that, you know, that, you know, Steve Jobs was a big deal was like, we're not going to put a bunch of crazy features in here because you still have to use your phone, you know? And so that's the kind of, I think that is one of the things that we lose is progressing so quickly that we get behind it. And of course there's, you know, a lot of manufacturers have kind of a
development curve that's going to, and Apple does too, I'm sure, and that goes out 8-10 years of kind of where they're trying to slowly nudge people towards, you know, some goal. And so a lot of these are here, but I do think that going too slow means somebody else makes you look bad because you look like you're moving slow, and going too fast, everyone complains that they don't have a MagSafe.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and it's really endemic in the tech industry, especially. And you see Intel's having all sorts of problems because they can't really innovate out of
starting to run into physics.
Yeah. Physics. Yeah. So,
well, I think part of it is that you need muscles only develop when you have a force to push against. And when you feel as though you're selling the most successful, high margin, financially successful products in the world, it's hard to say that I've got a problem that we desperately need to solve, where we're ordering in Chinese food. We're going to sit here in this room for 2 days until we figure out how to do this. It's always Apple couldn't have done what they did had they not been completely on the ropes and, in a sense, desperate enough to say, what the hell, let's do whatever. Microsoft was in exactly that same position when they finally got rid of Ballmer, and they said, look, we don't want to be like IBM. We don't want to just be a consultancy firm. We really want to continue to have a role to play in the future of technology. And that's going to mean doing things that are kind of ridiculous on the face of it, but lead us into better things. So I don't know what the solution is for Apple. I just don't think that they're... I'm not seeing evidence in their product line that they are really, really eager to challenge themselves and put themselves at great risk. I think that they see that safety cushion underneath them of all the profits they're making from the other product lines, and they say, well, you know, we'll dally about with making a solid gold watch. We'll dally about with doing these kind of weird looking computers, but we're not going to do the thing that 2 years from, we are okay with always being the company that has to answer the question, well, Apple, why aren't you making a product like that? We are no longer the company that is really geared towards making other companies feel the pressure of, God, why didn't we make something like the iPhone?
Yeah. Let's take a break. Andy Inako, Chicago Sun-Times, pithy, brilliant, and restarting his machine. we know there. The sound is great, but there's some video issues, so we'll restart. Andy Inako is, of course, from the Chicago Sun-Times, from thepixelcore.com, and Mr. Alex Lindsay, AlexLindsay on the Twitter. Don't send him signatures with images.
No, you can send the signatures, just don't ask me if I got the attachment. That's all I'm saying.
Because I did. It was a paperclip. And if you do send it, don't send a PDF to Adam Engst at Tidbits, because he can't open it.
Tidbits. Or I'll delete half of it.
He'll accidentally delete the text layer. Tidbits.com. But they still put out a great publication, eBooks, Take Control series, and, of course, the world-famous, longest-running, and best. It's longest-running because it's the best Macintosh newsletter.
There we go.
Tidbits.com. Not just Mac. All Apple. Our show today brought to you by Squarespace. It's a new year. It's a new Squarespace. Make your next move known to the world with the best platform for your website. With a new year comes new resolutions, new ideas, new goals. Whether you're starting a business, changing careers, or launching a creative project, you know there's nowhere better than Squarespace. It makes it easy to create a professional website, beautiful looking, but with underlying engineering technology that is state of the art. And I really want to emphasize that it's design plus great engineering and great hosting that make your site sing. Whether you need a portfolio for your photography business or your artwork, whether you want a professional blog, an online store, it's all in there in your Squarespace website. Multiple templates. This is new, and I didn't know this, and I'm going to try it out. They've always improving stuff. Multiple templates now on a single website, so you can have multiple designs at the same time. And the designs people want, you know, the state-of-the-art modern stuff like the grid-style landing pages, it's all the rage now. But you can do it without having to be a designer, without having to be an engineer. It's all built in. They've got infinite scroll-related posts, built-in mobile, of course, on every site, which means your site looks great on any size screen, from a 55-inch living room TV to a 5-inch iPhone 4. Squarespace makes it work. Actually, the FO4 was what, 3.5 inches. Plus, if you're doing commerce, every Squarespace template comes with commerce built in. It's the only platform that lets you create, manage, and brand your store in a beautiful way. It doesn't look like something, an add-on, an afterthought. Your store fits the look and feel of the rest of your site, which is awesome. Get a free custom domain with an annual purchase. They have now Squarespace domains. In fact, if you want to get a new domain, go to Squarespace Domains, register your domain, and they get you a beautiful, clean, spam-free parking page until you're ready to start building. I am so happy I moved my blog to squarespace.com. And I want you to do the same. Make your next move. You can try it free at squarespace.com. All I ask, if you buy, use the offer code MacBreak. That way you'll get 10% off. Squarespace.com. Make your next move with squarespace.com. Still the best. We're talking, let's see, did Andy get back on? Good. And we'll see if that fixes the lip sync and stuttering issues. I think you're using the iOS for Skype now, or the Skype for iOS, whatever it is.
No, this is the since I wasn't using this computer for 2 whole weeks for any podcast whatsoever, I moved it to the living room and so I haven't the usual sanitation that I procedures that I use were not applied. So perhaps this will fix things.
You are not like those parents who are suing, saying FaceTime caused their daughter's death. The driver of their car that crashed into their daughter, killing her, was using FaceTime while he was driving, going 65 miles an hour on Interstate 35 north of Dallas. Very tragic. Sad, sad story. Please, folks, don't use FaceTime when you drive. Who would do that?
I've seen people read books while they're driving. In Peru, the cab driver was watching a TV show and texting while driving me back to my at 2 o'clock in the morning. I was just like, I just hope I make it. I just hope I make it. I just hope I make it.
However, suing Apple is going a little far. They say, though, that Apple should install and implement a design that locks out FaceTime while somebody's driving, which is certainly doable. In fact, we're starting to see the NTHSA, I can never get the acronym straight, the National Highway Transportation and Safety Administration or whatever, is now recommending that all phones have software that prevents people from doing this kind of thing, texting, I guess FaceTime would be included, while they're operating at a certain, above whatever it is, 10 miles an hour. It'd be easy thing to do. You know how fast the car is going.
Yeah, but how do you know if you're behind the wheel? Well, I mean, I think that's the question. I mean, I don't think everybody not able to use it.
The Waze app does something like this where it basically has a dead man switch that says that if you try to operate it while type in an address to go to while the car is in motion, it will say, yeah, you're not allowed to do that unless you're a passenger. If you're a passenger, tap this button. I'll let you do that. But that's a no-go. So at least at some point I don't know how that would solve a legal liability, if there is any sort of legal liability on Apple's part. But it is true that there could be a way to. I wish that there were, for instance, something like a way to lock out messages so that you can just create an app. An Android, there are apps you can install that basically, when you have a do not disturb mode when you're driving, it will automatically respond to any text with, "I'm sorry, I'm in the car right now, but as soon as I'm at my destination, I will read and reply to your text." You never even see the text message because that's what the app is designed to do. It'd be nice if there was some way to do that so that that's a default action, so that the person has to be even more willfully stupid and ignorant and careless than the normal person who texts or FaceTimes while they drive.
But Google's kind of moving in that direction. Google Auto now will launch automatically on my Pixel if I'm driving. And put me into a much more constrained mode with just a few buttons and stuff like that. I think that's Google's way of trying to avoid this. This isn't Apple's.
The voice had a special car mode. You can even install a separate app, a third party app that's a car dashboard style app, not even a Google Auto. But yeah,
Apple has the same thing. There are Apple apps that do third party apps. There's no Apple app that does that, but there's this third party apps that do that. This isn't the only lawsuit against Apple. There's also a class action suit involving text messaging. The reason, by the way, is because it is a problem now. California just passed a very stringent law that went into effect this year That says you can't even touch. You can touch the phone twice. You can't pick it up. You can't hold it. And you can only touch it twice for any reason at all. So laws. But the reason is we're seeing fatalities rising at a rate unprecedented in 50 years. And so this is, you know, much of it is distracted driving, clearly.
I think it's significant because now we're starting to see the first wave of new drivers who grew up with text messaging and grew up with Facebook and grew up with social media because it's so ingrained into their means of communication that it's hard for them to see an option of not using it. So this is I think we need to hit kids with a bigger stick in this particular instance.
Former chairman of the National Transportation Safety Board, Deborah Hirschman, says the technology exists. We just don't have the stomach to implement it. But I think the national consensus is rapidly moving that way.
I think it's going to push demand dramatically towards driverless cars.
Right.
And people are really going to want to not. I mean, what's going to happen now is you've got a lot of people that are very used to interacting and they've been slowly pushed away from it. But what happens is that people are less and less interested in their car when it's getting literally in the way of interacting with everyone. And so I think that the demand for, you know, autonomous cars is going to, as all these laws become more and more stringent, people are going to more and more want not to have to deal with the car at all. They want to get from point A to point B. They don't want to deal with it.
There's also a smoking gun. Apparently Apple filed for a patent in 2008 that made it impossible for a driver to use a phone while driving. And by the way, part of that software looks at where in the car you are. If you did this, well, people would just buy an Android phone. On the other hand, David Teeter, who's a former National Safety Council member and a private consultant in road safety, said if Apple had deployed this technology 10 years ago, there'd be more people alive today. Think about it from a parent's perspective. And the issue comes down to, has Apple made a product, or actually shouldn't just be Apple, but have manufacturers made a product so addictive we can't put it down? And if that's the case, then don't they need to offer some sort of support to force people to put it down?
I think Alex is actually onto something. My son is just about 18, so I went through the whole teaching him to drive and everything not that long ago, and he was offended by the whole concept. I'm like, but I don't want to do this. You know, this is a terrible interface. I could kill someone. You know, this, why do I want to do this? And I had to basically browbeat him into learning to drive because it's a skill you need to have in this
scary.
World.
It's scary. You know, son had the same issue. Scary. He wouldn't drive when he could first do it. He waited years.
Tristan's like, I want a self-driving car.
And yeah, but I understand. But that's not practical because that's years and years away.
Yeah.
That's 40,000 or 50,000 more people dying. Because they estimate 8,000 people died last year due to distracted driving. So what do we do now?
Well, I do think that, I mean, I don't know what Apple's patent specifies, but I have to believe that we have enough sensors in the phone, whether it's audio or video, to know whether someone is the driver.
I don't know. I think things like CarPlay can tell you very quickly, because as soon as you could have that, the phone that attaches to the car is the one that isn't going to let you do anything else on it. You know, I think that is a pretty simple thing. I think that once you start trying
there's a company called Cell Control that makes a $129 device that uses sonic waves to figure out if the phone is in the driver's seat, is being used by the driver or a passenger. And it might turn off the phone, it says, of the passenger sitting right behind the driver. Aw, boo-hoo.
Right, move over. But no, seriously, the kinds of things that they're capable of figuring out now are insane. There's some researchers at the University of Washington, for instance, who can actually identify where people are in rooms and gestures by how you interrupt Wi-Fi signals that are just ambient in the atmosphere. I mean, you can do that kind of stuff. Yeah, you can figure out who's sitting in the driver's seat.
Professor at the University of California Berkeley Law School says they should have done it. And even done it at a market risk, Apple has failed in their social responsibility. And it's not just Apple. It's the cell phone companies. It's the other manufacturers. I do think there needs to be some.
I wouldn't go quite that far, but I do think that we're at a level of risk to not only the people who, and we're not talking about the idiots who actually use these phones, but the people who have to share a road with the people who use these phones. The level of fatality is such that now an extraordinary need has been demonstrated that perhaps was not there. The proof was not there 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. That now is the time where Apple and Google really can come forward and say the default action is that if it thinks that you're driving a car, it will lock out certain features, and you can re-enable certain features, but only after you pull to the side of the road and you stop moving. And we will make it hard enough that you can't do it at a stoplight. And we are going to they really have to start inconveniencing people in order to do these sort of things. Normally, I do have to mention one thing. The thing at the back of my mind at laws like this is that they can be abused, because if you have a cop that is maybe not the best candidate for his or her job, they're just wants to pull people over, and they need the excuse, why did you pull this person over in the first place? You can always say, oh, well, I thought it looked like he or she was using the phone, and so I pulled him over for that infraction to write them up for a ticket for that. Oh, it turned out that it was just a candy bar they were eating, and that was pretty okay with me. But again, this is an argument that I might have made more seriously 6 or 7 or 8 years ago, before there was so much data. Now that there is so much data, that's sort of a back burner sort of thing.
So we have an example of where this has already come up, which is basically the whole thing with locking the phones so that they can't be stolen. You can't, the activation lock on the iPhone. The kill switch. Basically, that was something that had to get pushed for hard by a lot of people. Even government got into it. I mean, I think the senators were browbeating. The cell carriers could have done this ages ago. They didn't do it. And so it finally came down to Apple and Google to say, okay, we're going to make it so cell phones cannot be stolen, basically. They're worthless as soon as they're stolen. And I don't know the stats, but my understanding is that it worked hugely. I mean, the crimes went down because cell phones were no longer attractive as theft objects. Yeah. So this is the same kind of thing.
Although, as somebody in the chat room points out, we also have big drunk driving problems, and we've yet to see breathalyzers attached to ignition switches.
That's a totally different thing. That's definitely a guilty before proven innocent sort of thing. Saying we assume that you're going to be committing a crime by climbing into the seat of this car. A phone is not part of your right to drive. A phone is simply a convenience that you're allowed to have, and the manufacturer can decide. I guess part of it is that you can. I don't feel as though we need laws to do this. We need Google and Apple, because of their position of being able to understand how best to implement this, the capabilities of their hardware, and the way to make it so that people actually use this feature. They're more capable of creating this in a way that's actually going to be effective, as opposed to trying to simply comply with some law that is designed to sound really good and will definitely be voted in, because the name of the law will be named after some adorable little kid who got killed by a distracted driver. And that's not what we want.
Well, and I think that the there has to be some interaction with the car manufacturers themselves. I mean, I think that the knowing exactly where a person is, it may seem like, oh, we can do anything, but usually that's anything within a certain percentage of failure. So it might be 1, 2, 3% of failure for something like that. And when you have hundreds of millions of phones out there, that's going to be a big number of people that are upset because they're in an Uber and they can't use their phone, And so I think that is the thing that a lot of these manufacturers have take into account. And that's why it's probably a little bit more difficult than just turning a feature on or creating some software, is that there will be some very small percentage of failure, but it's a huge number of people that will be upset. And I'm sure that I will admit that I'd be one of those people. If I was sitting in the back seat and I couldn't use my phone, as soon as I was able to use my phone, I'd be angrily tweeting that, who was the idiot who did this? Yep. And so I would be the first one to be eviscerating someone for turning my phone off when I'm not driving. It's not a feature that I want. And I think that by the time we figure this out, what we'll be rolling out in mass, in between 2020 and 2030 is going to be, we're not going to have a lot of cars that we have to drive by the 2030. The point here also,
everybody's saying, well, we've had this problem for a long time. We've had distracted driving for a long time, but 10% increase in auto fatalities in the first half of last year, equivalent rise the year before. Something has happened in the last couple of years that has dramatically increased the number of auto deaths. So people have been putting on their makeup and reading books and changing the radio station and inserting cassettes for years, but all of a sudden we get this sudden rise. I think you can safely say.
Well, and it's been that way also for cell phones. My father, you know, is an attorney, and if one of his clients got into an accident, the first thing that he would do would be subpoena the phone records. You know, like it was the number one thing you do in a car accident is you subpoena the phone records and see if someone's
on the phone.
Yeah, the
last time I was rear-ended, the guy said, "Hey, I'm sorry, I was on the phone." I mean, he just out and said it. I thought you were going to stop at that light. I thought you were going to go through that light, and I was on the phone, so I didn't bother to stop.
Yep. I had to lay on the brakes on my bike once and just commit to, okay, at some point I'm going to skid and then I'm going to slide and then I'm going to fall over, because I was passing by, I was entering an intersection where I had the right of way. An SUV was stopped at the stop sign, but the car was like rolling forward as though they'd stop, but they'd seen me. And they're just not going to put the accelerator on until I pass by. But I looked and saw the driver was looking down at a phone.
There you go.
And I'm like, how much do I want to bet that this person really has seen me and is waiting versus no, the reason why she took her foot off the accelerator is because she needed to check this text message. And as soon as she's done reading it, she'll stop on the accelerator and kill me. And so.
Well, and I think a lot of people think that they're much better at texting and driving than they actually are, because when they're doing all the bad driving, they're looking down, you know? And so when they look back up, they're fine, you know? And the thing is that I've had a couple friends who I just literally, kind of throw a little tantrum, you know? So I'm not saying that, you know, like that. I'm like, you got to put your phone down. You know, I'm not going to stay in the car, you know, cause it's just like, it's not because they're on the phone texting. It's because they're on the phone texting and they are swerving. And I am like, this is not working, you know, like whatever you think is working, it's not. You know, I've definitely gotten into the habit of, if I feel like I need to respond to something or even look at my phone, I just pull over. You know, like I can pull over for a second, take a look at it. If there's something that pressing, you know, I think it's, and I think that I don't know if people have worked with the car with, you know, I'm looking at getting a new car and making sure that it has CarPlay in it so that are you able to interact with all the different messaging apps with CarPlay? Because I don't use messages much anymore. I mean, my wife messages me, but outside of that, I'm using Slack and Messenger and even Hangouts and other things like that. I'm not, you know, there's like five or six of them, you know, WhatsApp and everything else and I feel like I can't use those. I think that's another generation of things that has to get updated, that you can decide what you're going to listen, you know, what you're going to have read to you and how you're going to respond, because, messages is a
minor part of my life. There are apps that will do all of the things we're talking about on all the platforms, but people don't choose to use them.
Well, will Messenger work through Apple CarPlay? Is the question? Like,
well, no, I know, but I'm just saying that.
Yeah, but this seems like a really great opportunity for AI, like Google Assistant. Imagine not only does your phone understand that you're driving, it will say, "I'm sorry, Andy is busy right now. He's driving. May I help you?" And the person who's texting, I wanted to know if he's going to be, if he's on time for, we're supposed to be meeting at 5, is he going to be on time? It's like, oh yes, he's on I-95 right now. He's just passing through Waltham. His ETA is 4:20 PM. He should be on time for your 4:30.
I would never want my phone to tell me that, because it would probably tell them I'm on time, yes. I'm actually like 20 minutes late.
Can I take a message for you?
I also think tell them there was an accident.
I think it's a reasonable prediction also to say this won't be solved until we get autonomous vehicles, and we're just going to have to put up with another 5 to 10 years of senseless fatalities on the road.
Defensive driving.
Do the best you can. And it does really argue for I really think we're getting to be worse drivers, just period. It's not just the phones. We're just worse drivers.
I really do think it's a generational thing. I do think that I'm capable of, because I'm way older than an 18, 19, 20 year old. Again, I remember a world in which I didn't necessarily, in which not responding to a message is an option, and where I can actually think that, gee, isn't it nice that I'm in the car for 90 minutes? And so I'm basically disconnected from most of reality.
I'm certainly not saying that the most of these distracted driving incidents are not the responsibility of older drivers. I'm just saying that I think that if there's a noticeable spike, it has to do with not only the spike in usage of these messaging apps, but also, again, people entering the getting their driver's license who grew up with the idea that this is an immersive sort of thing. Yeah. You do not ever leave the bubble of social connectivity, and why would you ever want to?
And we should point out that this isn't Darwin in action, because as most of these lawsuits are not by people who were driving distracted, but by innocents who were killed by people who were driving distracted. It's not just the driver, the distracted driver, who's suffering here. And so that's why it's a larger societal issue. I don't know what the it does seem like the best answer would be for all the cell companies and all the manufacturers just to turn on software. You know what? So what if you're a passenger and you can't text? Get over it.
Well,
I would not.
Again, that's all I'm saying. Emergency.
So they do have sensors. I mean, the cars do have sensors in the seats for airbags at this point.
Right. They know who's sitting where. Yeah.
Right. If you could tie into that in some way, you know, with a little transmitter in the car.
The airbag doesn't go off if someone is going into insulin shock. I'm saying that it's a very dangerous thing to suddenly say that for
what did we do before we had phones in cars, which wasn't that long ago?
Well, listen to the radio, damn it. Sorry.
Well, we again, if we had a medical, we die, which is why we're happy that we have phones now.
I would guess more people die from bad driving and distracted driving than lives are saved by having phones and cars.
And that would give me very little comfort as I see the light in my wife's eyes to fade out and then go away forever.
Pull over. There must be a phone booth around there somewhere.
Honey, but just your death is making up for 8 lives being saved by the fact that I can't call for medical assistance.
This is why
right
public
now.
Policy is so difficult. By the way,
in the end, we just moved to trains. I mean, you know, really.
We blew it. We had all these great things, and we just got, especially in California, enamored of the idea that one person, one car is the way to go, and it's just been a mess.
Stupid Beach Boys and their songs about how cool it is to have a car.
Little Deuce Coupe. All right.
Where's the train songs? That's Arlo Guthrie. Guthrie.
Woody.
I took the long way, picked up my friends and me, and therefore that's where we can drive in the HOV. We got commute.
I see the train a-coming down the tracks. Let's see the Apple Campus Christmas New Year's edition. Once again, the great drone Wow, that's looking almost done. That really looks like a UFO now.
Oh, almost ready for the flame decals.
Needs a really big tree in the middle.
That's what's missing, right? Is the landscaping. That's the last thing you do. The solar's really almost all in. It looks very nice. They're still working on that. There's solar on the whole roof. Wow, that's a lot of capacity.
Everyone can run a hairdryer at their desk and not even care.
Is it so? I know Google now has said we are 100% renewable in all our operations, and I'm sure Apple's aiming for that. When's the first event that I'm not going to be invited to in the new auditorium? When is that? That's what I want to know. I'm telling you, I am going to reject my pride, get down on my hands and knees, and beg Apple to let me come to the first event in the thing. There's Tantau Avenue, as opposed to Tauntaun Avenue. They really missed a bet. We could have called it Tauntaun Avenue. That would have been awesome.
Especially if they have, like, if there's like a shuttle bus and they have warming stations shaped like.
It never gets that cold in Cupertino.
Oh, people would use them still. People would use them.
Everybody asks, like, what did it smell like?
Much like a real bus kiosk, you thought it smelled bad on the outside, and then you got in.
Some people, I guess, are hearing only one channel, and so the music's driving them crazy, so I'm just going to mute the music. It sounds okay to me in my mix, but I guess some streams are left channel only or something like that. Many different types of trees being planted, so you are getting some landscaping.
You are not getting Frisbee back if it lands in Mr. Apple's yard.
Nope. Walkways to and from various areas. Look at that. That's nice. Curvy paths. Tarps laid near maintenance facility due to rain.
Oh, man, they got tarps too?
This is really over-annotated.
I want to work at Apple.
The mountain of dirt. By the way, we've been watching that mountain of dirt shrink. It's down to nothing. They needed that dirt for something.
They've had employees walking through the exercise yard with little bags in their pants to hide their activity
again
from the Chamber of Commerce.
The main tunnel and security kiosk. Anyway, you can view this on your own. This is nice. Pokemon. I'm sorry, I confused the two. Super Mario Run. How many of you are, just a show of hands, how many of you have paid the $10 to unlock all the levels? It's a free program that has three free levels, and then it's $10. According to some estimates, a mere 3%. Apple says no, it's bigger than that. But how much bigger? The Wall Street Journal said it was about 3%. Apple Insider asked Apple, and Apple says more than 3%. But I'm guessing it's not 10%. But yeah, what, I don't know. What is that reasonable expectation? First of all, it's $10. That's expensive. Super Mario Run is fun. Disappointing to some Mario hardliners.
Hardliners.
it's like Super Mario.
No, that's what
the Soviet.
Well known as the Soviet Mario.
Yeah,
the Soviet Mario. Apple may, is this Apple acknowledging that there are some markets where headphone jacks will be missed for Chinese New Year? They're giving away wireless Beats Solo 3 headphones if you buy select Mac or iPhone products. It's a one-day only sale, and you have to be in China, Hong Kong, Taiwan, or Singapore. But maybe, I wonder if this has something to do with the fact that there may be some resistance in certain markets to not having a headphone jack. Okay, we'll give you some headphones.
Yeah, remember that for a lot of people, the price difference of having to buy a different set of headphones is really considerable.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're still getting headphones with the thing.
Get
so
them. You get the thing with the thing. And
hard to know.
Yeah,
you get the. You also get the deal that you need to use the old headphones. So
right. CES is starting today. People are going to Vegas. We've sent Father Robert and a team down there. We expect to see a few Apple-focused products, including from Dell and LG Type-C displays suitable for use with your MacBook Pro.
Everyone wants a really thin display because that's the most important thing about displays.
It is thin. This is the new Dell Ultra Thin 27-inch IPS display, the world's thinnest monitor. It is HDR10. That there are three competing HDR standards. Fortunately, most devices will work with a variety of them, but this one is HDR10. You will want the HDR, I think, especially on a 4 or 5K display. LG is going to have some new displays. When Renee comes back next week, I'll ask him, because he bought the LG 5K display. I think he got it by now. But there are new ones.
He Instagrammed from the Apple Store with his boxes.
Yeah, I saw the boxes.
The bastard.
Bastard. This is a product I might get from Otherworld Computing. Won't be available till this spring. They're showing it at CES. It's a stack that goes underneath your MacBook Pro, makes it a thick device, but adds 4 terabytes of storage, an SD card slot, traditional USB Type A ports and a gigabit Ethernet port. See, Alex is going to want one.
Does it have a MagSafe? No.
No. It'd be fun if it had a CD-ROM. It looks big enough to hold.
I was going to say, how does it connect in?
That's a good question. It looks like the Mac just sits on that, and I don't see any wires. They're leaving out the wire. There's got to be a Type C to Type C connection, right?
I would assume.
Yeah.
Well, unless they're doing something crazy like having you remove the base plate and screwing that into where that would go. But I can't imagine them getting clearance for doing that.
No. All right. And you mentioned the hack. This is a gift from Gizmodo that will make your AirPods look like dental floss. You just basically take a Glide sticker off your dental floss and you apply it. It does look remarkably like a dental floss case. And here's a guy who's apparently got...
There's commitment.
That's commitment. He's got gauges in his ears, decided to pop the little gauges out and put the AirPods through the holes in his ear.
Of course, I don't know how well the mic would work in that angle. You know, that's all I'm doing.
Mostly we'd be picking you up going, ow, 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 ow.
Yeah, make sure you have a hole first.
And that hole takes a little while to develop.
Yeah, you got to grow it. You got to slowly increase the gauges, bit by bit. Foxconn says we are going to replace almost every human worker with robots. So take that, Donald Trump. They actually are considering, apparently, doing some manufacture. Foxconn doing some manufacture in the U.S. If President
of the parts
Trump,
that have been automated. Yeah. So they're going to move the automated versions back to the U.S. With all the cash that Apple will bring back to the U.S. when they only have to pay 10% on it.
Wow.
That's what's going to, you know.
Foxconn calls the robots Foxbots.
I will not do it with a fox. I will not do it in a fox.
Not a foxy bot, a fox bot.
And like the wireless headphones, they are making them as fast as they can.
As fast as they can. I think that's probably exactly.
I think somewhere in the article it says that they're making them as fast as they can.
We're cranking our Fox bots out as fast as we can. Let's take a break. And ladies and gentlemen, our picks of the week coming up next. First, a pick for all of you. The Ring Video Doorbell. This was the holiday sensation. Ring is having a hard time. They're literally making them as fast as they can. And no wonder. I love our Ring Video Doorbell. I know people have multiple Ring Video Doorbells. Calacanis has two. They are fantastic. What is it? It's a doorbell. I got one right here. It replaces your existing doorbell. Or there you can use the original Ring on anywhere because it has a big battery in it. And it has a camera, an HD camera, microphone, and speaker, plus motion sensors. So this doorbell suddenly is the ultimate security device. When it was so great when we were on vacation, I could see who was coming and going from the house, if my son was having a party, what was going on, who came. And I have a record of it, too, because I pay I think it's $30 a year to store all that online. So I can always see. I can say, hey, you see this? 1:30 a.m. Who was that coming in at? I got my Ring Video Doorbell. You also see all the packages that are delivered. You can keep an eye on the packages. You can see anybody coming up your steps. And now we've got these great Ring of Security kits, which include not just the Ring Video Doorbell, but also take your pick. You could get the stick-up cam, which is a doorbell without the doorbell. It's got everything else, the camera, the motion sensors, the microphone, the speaker, and you could put those elsewhere around your property so that you can watch every bit of it wirelessly, because it also has the solar panel that keeps it charged all day and all night. Nice. The HD stick-up cam is weatherproof. You could put it anywhere. They also sell a chime that you could plug into any standard power outlet. So if your phone is in the other room and you can't hear the doorbell from where you are, maybe you're out there in the garage or the kitchen, and the chime will ring. And there's an illuminated security sign that deters intruders before they get to your door. That doesn't have to plug in either. It's got a solar panel that keeps it lit up. So pick the kit you want. Get up to $150 off for this limited time when you go to ring.com/MacBreak. Ring.com/MacBreak. I almost took this with me. I was going to install it for my mom. I didn't get around to it, but I'm going to go out in the spring and do this for my mom, because I did set her up with Eero's. I set her up. I did a tech visit to my mom, and this was going to be one of the things. I just didn't get around to doing it. Ring.com/MacBreak. Mom, it's her birthday. Yesterday was her birthday. Maybe I'll just send her the Ring of Security kit and say I'll install it when I get there.
For some reason, when you said it at the beginning of the ad, when you said the Ring Video, doorbell, I was imagining the Ring movie of a doorbell where it was a little video of a little kid with her hair like in front of her just running towards you. You know,
you have 1 week to convince somebody else to rub the same door and ring the same bell.
No, but it's not that.
There was one point where my daughter was at that age, and for some reason she'd come in at night from her room, and her hair would be in front of her. And when you wake up that way, and there's a girl after you've seen the movie, it wakes you up quickly.
Yeah,
you get very fast. Exactly.
Crawling up the well.
I was wondering, Leo, if the Amazon app could be integrated with the security thing, so it could actually tell you what's in the packages that you've just arrived on your doorstep.
That'd be awesome. Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah. See, got to be able to hack. You got to be able to connect the things together. iOS.
I think we're getting there. I really do. I think it's just a matter of time. A number of things that we're going to see at CES this week are the Amazon Echo tech capability built into a lot. Lenovo just announced their version, and it uses the Amazon software, so it works the same exact way. I think we're going to see a lot of devices with voice control built in. And one of the reasons Lenovo is doing it is they said we're going to use it as the hub for our home automation system. So I think that's another thing that's going to be a big story in 2017. All right, time for our, by the way, thank you, Ring, for your support and for a great product, which we use all the time, ring.com/MacBreak. Time for our picks of the week. Who should I start with? How about you, our guest, Adam Engst?
Certainly. So my pick of the week is sort of in beta, I guess, actually, but it is available and you can check it out. It's called Set App, and it's kind of an alternative to the App Store in some ways. You can think of it as Netflix for Mac apps, where you pay, I think it's $9.99 a month, and then you get access to, I don't actually know what the current number is. It's like, I don't know, 40 or 50 apps and more coming all the time. And these are real apps. These are apps from developers I know. Marked, Rapid Weaver, Clean My Mac.
So this is a little like the Humble Bundle.
Well, but it's a subscription. So you're paying your $9.99 a month, and you get access to all these apps. And what they do is kind of clever. So once you download the stuff, they all install themselves in a folder, but it's not the full app. It's just this little stub, so it doesn't take up that much space. And when you double-click it, it opens up this kind of a preview window, sort of like the App Store and the Mac App Store or the App Store for iOS. It's even a little better, frankly, I think. It tells you all about the app, gives you some screenshots and all that. And then you click I forget what the button is, open or install or run or whatever it is. And then it proceeds to download all the code
a port system for Mac apps.
So it's really easy to grab this stuff. And as I said, the apps are pretty serious.
But you pay one flat rate. You don't pay for each app, or how does that work?
It was one flat rate monthly.
How much is that?
It's $9.99 a month.
Okay.
So you have to decide whether it's going to be worthwhile if you have used enough apps. I mean, but you know, some of these apps, Ulysses, iFlix, Hype, I mean, these are things that do cost some money. And, you know, if you were going to be paying for them and their updates and whatnot every year, $120 for this collection of, I said, I wish I knew how many it was exactly. I'm going to check my folder. Open in Finder. I've got 57 items right now.
Wow.
So that's a lot of apps. And as I said, every couple of days I've been getting a notification. We just added a new app. You can check it out. So, you know, this is from the MacPaw people, one of the Ukrainian company behind Gemini and Clean My Mac. And good folks. And I think they're taking it slow. They're not trying to, you know, hammer this out and, you know, be as big and, you know, fancy from the very beginning as they can. But it could be really useful for people who find themselves using a lot of apps and want to be able to try apps, you know, a little bit like Netflix. You know, you want to watch the first 5 minutes of the movie and go, yeah, I guess not. You know, no harm, no foul.
Very interesting.
Well worth a look.
And I use a number of the apps that are on here like you. These are, you know, good apps. Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's not one of those bundles where you're like, yeah, there's the one app I know about and then the seven things I've never heard of before. So it's got some, you know, and some of them are fairly productive, like Simon, which is a website monitoring app. Again, big app. Disk Drill, you know, disk recovery software. Chronosync Express, you know, syncing app. This is stuff that I'm looking at in my site. iStat Menus. I installed that immediately. I love iStat Menus. So people should check it out. You know, I understand all the issues with subscriptions. People don't want to have a subscription sometimes. That's fine. You don't have to. This isn't required of you. But if, you know, $10 a month, $120 a year is worth it to you for access to these 57 apps and more that may appear in the future, give it a try.
I like seeing new models, new ways of doing stuff.
Yeah.
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 It is setapp.com, SETAPP.com. Alex Lindsay, your pick of the week.
So I spend a lot of time on the road, and I have a phone that dies at 40% when it's warm and 60% when it's cold.
That's really interesting that the temperature of the phone affects that.
Yeah. I didn't think it would, but it is repeatable. So so if it's below 45 degrees, it will end very quickly.
Yeah.
So I've become very sensitive to always having a battery that I have around. You know, like most of my phones have these Sina cases, you know, that I keep them in. You know, this is the, Sina case here that keeps all my wallet stuff. And so, so I don't want to have a case. Then I have to find cables and so on and so forth. I've really gotten into these. I've gotten a couple of these little Mophies. They keep on getting smaller. And I think I might have recommended one before, but this is even tinier. This is the 4,000 milliamp Mophie. But the big thing is it has a lightning connector that's just kind of integrated. Which I just didn't do very well, but you can basically just kind of peel it off. Now, there's a couple that have this built in that are cheaper. The real problem is that they're extra wires or they're bigger or, you know, and what I really need is just something to top me off if I'm, you know, so I throw this in my back pocket a lot of times or in one of my Scotty vest pockets, you know, when I'm going to walk around just to make sure that I, you know, I have some power if I need it. And even with my iPhone 7, I find myself needing it every once in a while. So much less than my 6S. Not that I'm bitter. It's a great little battery. And I just like that it's very small, easy to pull out, and it keeps the cable with it, so I don't have to figure that out when I'm in the airport. That's it.
Nice.
By the way, I bought the luggage that we had 2 weeks ago.
Oh, the away luggage, isn't that great?
It was good. First time I'm in the airport, I'm charging it. I'm charging my phone sitting on top of the luggage. I was like,
I kind of blew it. I brought my away carry-on, but I checked it. Then I realized, oh, shoot, I can't charge my phone because I checked my luggage. So next time, carry it on.
No, I've trained my kids now to all carry, you know, 9x14x22
exactly.
cases.
Then you don't have to check
luggage.
They pack
their little cases,
yeah.
And they've got little Rush 12 backpacks that have, you know, little, you know, we're getting their names on them and stuff like that. And so it's like just a bunch of little, you know, we're kind of training them all for that process.
I do notice that more airports have power now. The Boston's Logan has plugs everywhere. So, which was nice.
And then some specifically don't, which I'm really bitter about.
It's like, oh, it's too expensive. People would probably use it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Andy and I co pick of the week.
You know how I apologize. I'll be sometime between now and next show. I'll be examining the entire house for things that on the network that might be causing a stuttering video feed. But I'll go after Alex, and Alex will have talked about a $12,000 thing, and then I'll talk about like a free app, or a special putty that costs $4. This is not one of those times.
Uh-oh.
So let's save that reveal for later. My pick of the week is a really wonderful thing that I've been testing out for the past couple of weeks, and I'll be testing it until I have a loaner of this until early spring. This is an e-bike made by Specialized.
Oh, I want an e-bike so bad.
Then this is now people think of electric bikes with electric motors as like they're like mopeds. That's not the case. This is there are a bunch of different bikes that are like this, where the entire idea is that it's an electric assist bike,
right?
Where it still pedals. Exactly like a regular bike, except imagine that you're way, way, way more fit. So that instead of, you know, normally on my Trek bike, I'm doing about 10, 11 miles per hour average on like a 5 or 10 mile trip. On this bike, with the assist of the electric motor providing about 40% of the work, I'm averaging about 15 to 20%. And the result is that although, again, it feels like there's no sudden stops, there's no lurches, it's just simply things are a little bit easier. You can still tire yourself out. Your legs will still kill. You will still be out of breath. But the difference is that when you get to the top of that gentle hill that goes on for a mile and a half, instead of when you reach that plateau finally, instead of feeling like you need to go into the grass and die, you will just be very, very tired. And it also means that if for me, like the comfortable radius of riding my regular bike is I will ride the bike anywhere that's 5 or 6 miles or less. With this e-assist bike, that's been increased to 10 or 15 because A, I'm not totally beat to hell after doing 15 or 20 miles. And also I can get there twice as fast as I would on a regular pedal bike. I found this out this morning. I rode to a breakfast date in pouring rain, and it was 40 degrees or maybe a little less than 40 degrees. And the reason why I said, okay, I'll still take the bike as planned is knowing that I won't be out in the rain as long as I would have on my regular bike. And also, in addition to like the assist mode, it also has what I call ridiculous mode, which is instead of being a regular bike and it will give you some help, it essentially turns into an exercise bike, and the rate at which you turn pedals acts as a throttle control for the bike, so that if I want to turn the pedals really, really fast, I can do 20 to 25 miles an hour.
Whoa.
And I'm only getting tired because of how fast I'm turning the cranks. But if I want to get up that really, really steep hill at the bottom of my street and I'm in ridiculous mode, I can turn the pedals very, very slowly and will just smoothly get me up the street.
Huh.
So if I want to get out of the rain really, 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 really quickly, or if I'm on like a 20-mile ride and I'm really not feeling it for the last 3 miles, or if I'm 50 miles into a ride and I'm at the base of a really, really high hill and I'm not feeling the need to like shift and pedal really, really hard, it still works because there's still some force fed back to the pedals, but in the ridiculous mode it can take you to 25 miles an hour very easily, but it can also just get you up the hill without feeling as though you're gonna die. The battery will last, it takes a lot of testing. I'm figuring it at about 50 or 60 mile range. That's with a combination of using it as a conventional bike, assisted bike, and using it in the ridiculous mode, or the lame mode, as a friend of mine would put it. The battery is takes about 10 or 12 hours to recharge using the charger that comes with the bike. You can also get a charger that will reach a big shoebox size charger that will recharge it in 3 or 4 hours. So you can either charge overnight in your garage, or conceivably, if you keep another charger in your office, you could recharge out the office, but it has enough of a range that you don't necessarily have to make sure you plug it in every night. This is not an Apple Watch. And it's just a really, really fun, comfortable ride. There are other e-bikes that like they want to really be flashy, and so the body is shaped like a lightning bolt or something. This looks like a very, very normal bike. You can even, like with a key, you can even remove the thick down tube is where the battery is. The picture that has that little power switch that I sent you, that is the removable battery. It goes the entire length of the down tube. And so you can actually pop that off, take it inside, and charge it inside.
Oh, that's a big deal. Not all e-bikes do that. I like that.
Right. Now, but there are some downsides to it, one of which being that Specialized makes a lot of bikes, but it's not as though they took one of their trail bikes and simply slapped a motor on it. This was designed to be an electric bike. As such, they didn't worry about weight.
Yeah,
so this is a 50-pound bike.
Yeah.
So although there is a mode, there are two other modes you can operate it with. There's there's a little indicator and a little thumb joystick on the handlebars near one of the shifters, so you can select these modes. One of them is a regen, which it doesn't regenerate electricity automatically when you brake or anything, but if you're going down a long hill, if you want, you can maybe get another couple percentage of the battery back by flipping it into this regen mode. But it also has the turn everything off, just be a regular bicycle mode, and that is death. it's because you're humping
so
a 50-pound bike, yeah, plus whatever weight you have. you're carrying with you up that hill or down that street. But it does have that mode if you want it. The other disadvantage, I will also say that it's all the components on this bike as a bike are really, really good. I've never had a bike with disc brakes before. They are excellent. Now I'm thinking of getting disc brakes for my bike because they're such a much better, much smoother braking experience.
Specialized makes really good bikes. They know what they're doing.
They're really, all the components are really good. The Shimano shifters are not the very top of the line, but they're comfortably in the middle of the range of what they do. I think they're electronic shifters. The brakes are hydraulically operated, so it's really, really comfortable to ride. Really, really nice, top and bottom, inside and out. And the other thing, before I finish, it's also technically it qualifies as a pick because it is technically a phone accessory because there's a phone app. the little bike computer that's built in does a great job, but you can also access special features through the phone app. For instance, let's say that you're a little bit parched for electricity, you didn't get to charge last night, and you're pretty sure you have enough juice in the battery to make it to work and back again. You can actually set it up through the app to say, whatever I tell you to do, I want you to interpret that with the idea that I'm telling you to make sure I still have 20% battery left at the end of the day. So it will fine tune the performance of the battery so that maybe you will have to work a little bit harder than you would normally do, but it will make sure that you have whatever percentage you have left. You can also tell it to, as you get more proficient, you can actually start off by saying, please assist me 90% of work. But you can dial that down to whatever you want it to be. So if you just want 20% or 10%, I've got it, I think at 45%. I might actually take it down a little bit because there are times mode that I feel like I could be working harder. But as your level of fitness increases, you can change that up or down as you want to go, or if you're finding you're having trouble in certain routes. So it's really, really great bike. I'm having a lot of fun with it. I'm riding a lot more, even though it's winter and even though the weather is kind of crappy. Now, here's the bad news. It's $4,000. Brand new. And this market, some of the other e-assist bikes are between $1,500 and $2,500. I have not had a lot of experience with the rest of them. I've not seen the sort of features and the sort of performance I've seen in this one. It has a really high capacity battery. And once again, there are no lurches, there are no stops, there are no starts, there's no throttle. It's just simply you pedal and suddenly you are 18 years old again. And somehow you can do 20 miles and not even your butt will wear out before your legs or your heart will wear out. Or your lungs will wear out when you're using this bike. It's really interesting. I really want a bike like this to be on people's radar. My real review won't be coming for another few months because I really want to evaluate in terms of, let's say that you are a two-car family, but you're suspect that maybe you only need one real car because the other one is your spouse works 30 or 40 miles away. Your office is 5 or 10 miles away. And you've been thinking that, gee, could we do better by simply having a bicycle? Well, you can do even better if you have an e-bike because you'll get there faster, you'll be less tired out, you'll be less sweaty. And I really think that part of the solution to a lot of the problems we're going to have in transportation involve trying to get as many cars off the road as possible. I myself am in the very unique position because I'm self-employed, I work out of my house, and usually the places I need to go to are 5 or 10 miles away. As I said, I think a couple times before, I have not owned a car or excuse me, I've not owned a running car for about a year and a half now because I keep trying to see how long I can get away with not having one. And riding this bike for a couple of weeks makes me wonder if I ever want to have another car. I'll just say that I'm way more excited about the possibility of buying something like this e-bike in the future than I am about buying any new car that I could possibly buy in the future. It's really a great, great thing. also doesn't have a headphone jack. Well, actually, I will say one silly thing. I thought that an absolute no-brainer is, well, of course you're going to have like a charging port. So if you have like your phone mounted on the handlebars or your lights or something, because they usually are recharged by USB, so you can just plug in off this big honking battery. But no, I wonder if that's part of waterproofing. Unfortunately, over the past couple of weeks, I've had several opportunities to ride in the rain and leave this parked outside a diner or a library in the rain for a couple of hours.
It hasn't electrocuted me yet, and it hasn't failed to start yet. So maybe they'll sacrifice the waterproofing. But it's a dinger, and $4,000 sounds like a lot of money for a bicycle. It's not a lot of money for a high performance bicycle. And when you think about buying that second car for the family, for a 2-person family, imagine getting $4,000 for a really top of the line electric bike versus spending $8,000 to $10,000 for a used car with 50,000 or 60,000 miles on it, plus the taxes, plus the insurance, plus the gas, and think about everything that you could do with all that surplus money. And I'll tell you that it was ridiculous. It was raining. It was sleeting. It was cold. I had gloves on. I had a coat on. I was warm, but I was just being laced with rain. And I had this big grin on my face because I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm one of those idiots that I used to drive past in my car thinking, what kind of fool is out on his bike on weather like this? But you find yourself, this is so much fun. I'm enjoying riding a bike in the rain and being this kind of a fool. It's well worth anybody looking into.
But what you do need is the Night Bar 2000 so that you can have Kit the Night Rider. Show my Mac. There's no point in doing that unless you show the Touch Bar. This is the only use. Thank you to Patrick Delahanty for telling me about this. The only use for the Touch Bar in the Mac is to turn it. You can turn up my audio now. Just a little bit. It did? Oh, it stopped. To turn it into... So this is crazy. It's an open source project. Night Touch Bar 2000. You'll find it on GitHub. And it can turn your silly Touch Bar.
The world's easiest game of Pong ever.
When Patrick showed me, I thought, is there more? Is it going to do more? No. That's all it does. It just goes back and forth and plays the Knight Rider. Theme Andy Inokho, Chicago Sun-Times. Thank you so much for joining us. We will see you next week.
Thanks, guys. Missed you.
Missed you, too. But I hope you had a great holiday. And I'm sure you're going to have a wonderful Russian Orthodox Christmas. Little Christmas will be just great this year. Thanks to Adam Engst from Tidbits. Go to Tidbits, TIDBITS.com. And it's free. Get a hold of the best Mac newsletter in the world. And if you can have a few bucks to spare, become a premium subscriber because it's well worth it.
Thank you.
Thank you also to Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Corps, pixelcorps.com. Always a pleasure. Follow him on Twitter if you want to know what he's up to. Alex Lindsay. I guess you'll be in Vegas for the next few days.
Vegas for a couple days, and then I'm home. I'll be back next week, and then I'm off to Europe. So hopefully I'll be in on the 17th.
Look forward to seeing you
in
a few weeks. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That is 1900. No, 11 a.m. plus 8 is 1900 UTC. Please stop by and join us live if you can in the chat room at irc.twit.tv as well. If you can't, though, on-demand audio and video is available at our website, twit.tv/mbw. It's on YouTube, youtube.com/twit. By the way, so is Twit Live. We now stream live on YouTube. I'm happy to say at youtube.com/twit. And you can also find the show on every podcast program. Make sure you subscribe. That way you'll get every episode. If you'd like to be in studio, as our honeymoon couple was, congratulations to Kyle and Hallie from Bloomington, Indiana. Did you drag Hallie or did Haley drag you? You both, it was mutual? Nice. She married a geek and she knows it. Thanks for if you want to be in the studio for whatever occasion, and we do ask you, our maitre d' will ask you, are you celebrating a special occasion today? When you come in, just email tickets at twit.tv. We'll put a chair out for you. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. Now get back to work, because you know what, the first break time of 2017 is now over. Bye-bye.